Oh, Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking with our good friend, attorney Erwin Aronson, about some of the really corrosive bills working their way through the Pennsylvania state legislature. This unemployment comp bill that they keep trying to poison. They keep trying to bring up that the business bill, the one written by the Chamber of Commerce for Scott Perry, that House Bill 916, they keep trying to bring the negative stuff from that into the other bill, the one the Senate passed. Again, you're really trying to stick it to people while they're down, but that's what they do. And in the same frame of kicking someone while they're down, there's a workers' comp bill going through the legislature as well, going to make sure that 95% of the people injured on the job will never get to see their own doctor. They're going to make the time frame that you have to see the company's doctor from 90 days to 180 days, ensuring that somewhere around 95% of the folks never get to see their own doctor. We're going to talk about a lot more of the attacks that are coming today, another day of attacks on the way as we talk about, more abortion stuff that they're trying to do, more attacks on voter ID, just the whole soup du jour of the Republican attack machine. Also, in the second hour, we're going to talk with Erin Gill. She's an organizer with PA Access, paaccess.org, about the folks on Adult Basic that got booted to the curb. And I find it quite interesting that, the governor's wife came out and said, we want to make sure that the arts are funded, but not so much of anything else, especially the folks who got kicked to the curb. Also in the second hour, Hamilton Nolan, he's an editor over at Gawker.com. He recently wrote a piece called Slowly Killing My Soul, Life at Target. I'm going to talk a little bit about, the big box retailers, how younger workers view the stories. Because, Gawker is one of these pop culture sites. You don't often see hard-hitting pieces about workers' rights on pop culture sites. It'll be interesting to talk about that. And in the third hour, a SWAT team broke into this family's house looking for the defaulter of student loans. So they are now sending out a SWAT team to get people to pay their student loans. Wow. We're going to talk with Alan Colnage about that. He was in the movie The Student Loan Scam. He was in one of the movies, and he's written the book The Student Loan Scam, the most oppressive debt in U.S. history and how we can fight back. So we'll find out how we do that. Again, making sure that those student loans get paid by kicking in the door with a SWAT team. Man, scary stuff. So I guess got to talk about Wienergate again. Can't we get rid of the wiener already? Isn't this kind of old news? Well, yesterday you got Breitbart, the guy who has been behind this whole story, saying that he was not going, he was going to hold that X-rated picture back. You know, he wasn't going to release that. He was going to use it as insurance, if I remember the quote right. Well, he was on Opie and Anthony, these two nitwits who got fired from terrestrial radio because of some bizarre stunt in a church. And I guess Breitbart leaked it to him. Leaked it to these two. Now it's all over the place. And again, you know, what do you expect from somebody like Breitbart? What do you expect from somebody like that? What I find amazing, though, and I can't get this out of my head, is the story that they have been targeting him for a long time. They have been looking, there were people on Twitter who were following him, people on Twitter who were, you know, making comments about him. And, you know, you got to understand, if you're in that situation, and I think about it myself before I do anything, when you take a position on anything, you got to make sure that you're not the one doing some things as well. Make sure that your closet's clean. And I'm amazed. The more I think about this, the dumber I think he is for doing it. I still stand by my original position, which it's none of my business, has nothing to do with me. I'm not buying the whole, well, he lied to you. No, he should have never been asked about it because we're sophomoric and juvenile and we care about what consenting adults are doing within the confines of their four walls. Now, he may end up being forced to resign. Because the Democratic machine is kind of pushing back. You got the woman down here in Philly, Allison Schwartz, who's now come out and said, well, you know, you're going to have to go. And a guy I respect up in Maine, this Mike Michaud, a guy I respect, good labor guy, he's saying now, you know, Wiener, you got to go. Again, you know, this is not one of those moments of hypocrisy for me. You know, had Wiener been a guy who was out there saying, you know, look at me, I'm the family values guy. Look at me, I'm of such high moral fiber. Look at me, I'm, you know, this great statue of virtue. Then you go after him. If he's taking those positions, absolutely. Which is why, you know, when you look at the David Vitters and you look at the guy in the 26th district in New York and you look at Larry Craig, and you look at all of those Republicans who did that. They said, hey, look at me. I'm the guy. And then, well, turns out they went against what they believed. Then I got a problem with that. I mean, I really, you know, I look at David Vitter and I go, I got a problem with you still being there. But again, Republicans, they're willing to stand their ground. They're willing to fight back. And again, I keep looking at this, and it's another example of Democrats caving, and they're going to eventually turn on him. I hope he digs in. I hope he stands up for himself. But at the end of the day, I think he's going to get pushed out at one point or another by the party machine. Now his district, his district, I think, is behind him. Some of the polls I've seen, districts 50-55% behind him say he should not resign. The highest number I've seen that says he should resign is about 30%. I think the New Yorkers are like, who cares? Get me jobs. Get me an economy that works for everybody. Make sure people have health care. Make sure that the budget benefits working people. Make sure we've got the things that we need. But here's my problem with all this. You know, now the Democrats have divided themselves on this issue. And I watched Ed Schultz last night, who, again, you know, I had to laugh, and I'm sure you watched it, Jay, because you always do. I love the point where Bill Press said, you know, now you're acting like a right winger. And your buddy Ed went ballistic, could not contain himself, and really kind of showed himself as a right winger there.
Well, he's been consistent, agree with him or disagree with him. He's been consistent. I mean, since we're talking about the subject, here's the one caveat, Rick. If, in fact, he violated the law, and now there's whispers.
If he violated the
law. He might have been communicating with underage women, girls.
Again, if he violated the law, there are laws for that. You follow the rule of law. I've never said anything other than that. If he's guilty of something, you prosecute him. There's an ethics committee. You go through the committees. You go through the process. That's why you have these processes. And if he did, break the law, if he did something unethical, he should be held accountable for it. I'm right there with you. I'm right there.
And the negative is, and here's where you obviously disagree. I guess to some degree I disagree with the Democrats too. But basically their position is, look, you're taking steam out of our effort. You're taking focus with the Republicans instead of forcing the Republicans to talk about really important things. You're allowing them to talk about you.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. And you look at the fact that right now the Republicans have begun their privatization scheme for Social Security. Got very little news today. Wiener was the top story on everything, and you're right there. But this is where Democrats have to say, you know what? We're leaving the Wiener thing alone. We're going out and we're talking about policy. We're talking about how we move forward. So every time you have a Democrat who then comes out and does this stuff, they're feeding into the machine. And I look at this this Pete Sessions, a Republican from Texas, who is introduced this Safe Account for Every American Act. It's safe. Don't you feel so much better knowing that it's a safe account? What it is, again, it's the privatization scheme that Bush wanted to roll out. We're gonna allow people to opt out of Social Security. You're gonna have your own account. Go set it up in your name. Go put that tax money right in there, right in that safe account, because it's safe. No mention that it's on Wall Street. No mention that the same people who destroyed the country, collapsed the economy, are now going to be in charge of Social Security. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about the man behind the curtain. No, no. And I ask the question, you know, once we go down that path and we start burying all this money into Social Security, what happens when people go to retire, Jake? What happens had your money been in Wall Street in Social Security when you retired back before 2008, before the collapse? What would have happened to you? I think you'd be a Walmart greeter today.
Absolutely. And here's what the Republicans don't want to face. Just like in privatization, any other scheme, especially involving Social Security and Medicare, if in fact you put the money in the market and you don't have adequate money to retire, or you absolutely have to survive, what are you going to do? You're going to have to come back to the public dole, and you're going to go on welfare, and you're going to try to get signed up for programs. In many instances, you'll probably qualify. That should not happen. If you worked all your life, you should have that Social Security fund there. Oh, and by the way, it's going to be at the variances of the economy, which is exactly what happened several years ago, and that's exactly why we should never privatize Social Security.
But at the end of this, Social Security is not a retirement plan. It was never meant to be a retirement plan. It was meant to be anti-poverty insurance. So if you look at it through the frame that it's a retirement plan, just like your 401k, then most people don't have any problem with going, yeah, let's have a private account. But if you look at it from the frame that it was meant to be made, that this is anti-poverty insurance. This is to make sure that granny's not eating cat food. This is to make sure that people aren't living in cardboard boxes under bridges. This is to make sure that people have a minimum standard of living. That there's a line we've drawn in the sand that says, you know, no one falls below this. Now, there are so many things we should be doing with Social Security. This is not one of them. This privatization scheme, again, not one of them, because time and time again, we've seen this privatization scheme keep coming up, not just in Social Security, but across the board, Medicare, Medicaid, you name it, they want to privatize it. Our roads, our bridges, our transportation systems, they want to privatize it. They want to profitize it. They want to make sure that someone's making a profit and it's not you and me. And that's my problem with this. And again, you got to give them credit. They're good at messaging. Republicans are master messengers. This SAFE Act, it's safe. So the message that you're sending is all that money that's going into Wall Street, all that money that those criminals on Wall Street are moving around, it's safe. Don't worry. And again, you know, I go back to my grandmother. My grandmother, who during the Depression, you know, was a child during the Depression, still doesn't trust Wall Street. How did they I mean, there were a couple of generations after the Great Depression who didn't trust Wall Street. How is it so quickly that Wall Street collapses and we're back to thinking, oh, it's safe. It's safe.
Well, you hear these stories about people putting money in their bed springs.
Yeah,
that's true story.
Cans in the backyard.
True story. In bags. Burying them in the backyard. Yeah, why? That comes from the Great Depression.
Yep.
Some people carried with them till they died that lack of trust of banks.
And I don't know how they got away. I don't know how they turned it around so quick. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. Stick around. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The June 19th GE contract expiration for some 15,000 union workers is fast approaching as GE continues to push for what the unions say are massive rollbacks in health care, pensions, wages, and other things. Thousands of GE workers, represented by GE Workers United, rallied June 4th in Lynn, Massachusetts, to make it clear they're united against these massive concessions. Jeff Crosby, president of IUECWA Local 201, says GE's CEO serves as President Obama's jobs czar while his company pursues anti-worker tactics.
They've actually eliminated 22,000 jobs in the United States since the last contract. And in addition, because they helped write the tax code, they paid no federal income taxes last year. And in addition, they've got a $3.2 billion tax credit for next year. So there's no financial logic to this.
On Monday and Tuesday, hundreds of registered nurses from 31 states, joined by labor and community allies, gathered outside the White House and picketed the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They rallied near Congress on Tuesday, calling for a new Main Street contract for the American people. National Nurses United says that nurses want living wage jobs for all, equal access to quality public education, guaranteed health care with a single standard of care, a secure retirement with dignity for all, good housing and protection from hunger, the right to organize unions and collectively bargain, and just taxation systems where corporations and the rich pay their fair share. California's domestic workers' rights bill is headed for the state Senate after approval in the House. It would make California the second state to pass a domestic workers' rights bill.
Caring for elderly patients is hard work. Just ask Bustos Chavez. The former live-in caregiver had to bathe, feed, and tend to her clients' every need. That sometimes meant staying up all night with sick patients, as well as bedridden patients, who have to be turned over every 2 hours to prevent bed sores.
Which means to say that you are always awake. It means to say you are deprived from having a good rest.
She says that the lack of sleep poses health risks for both clients and workers.
Taking care of these patients and at the same time you don't feel good, it lessens the performance that you are giving to your client.
The Chavez is among the hundreds of workers throughout California that are demanding legislators pass a domestic workers' bill of rights. The measure would provide overtime pay, uninterrupted sleeping periods, paid sick leave, and workers' compensation. No one knows for sure how many domestic workers live in California, but organizers estimate there are at least 200,000 throughout the nation. The bill was approved in the state assembly last week and is now headed to the Senate. For Workers Independent News, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
That's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for all the unemployed in this state to stand up and march their behinds down here to the Capitol. Much like during the 1880s and 1890s, you saw Coxey's army march from Massillon, Ohio to Washington, D.C., the unemployed marching to say, hey, we want jobs. Do something. It would be nice to see that here. It would be nice to see the unemployed say, you know what, stop kicking us while we're down. Stop abusing us. Hey, how about some help? Instead of making us out to be the bad guys, calling us lazy, calling us shiftless, why not do something to help us out? Instead of that bill written by the Chamber of Commerce and the NFIB, the big sloppy wet kiss, the big business that Scott Perry put out, why not do something to help them? Why not help somebody? I mean, that's the thing that gets me about the Republicans and some of the others that go along with them. It's all about taking. It's all about taking and kicking people while they're down. Just drives me insane. Anyway, I've got our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson, on the line. Talk a little bit about the unemployment bill. There's also this insane comp bill. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, good to be here. How you doing?
I'm good. Hopefully I'll be better tomorrow. We're going to be going to New York City for do a little broadcasting from the UN.
Well, that's exciting stuff. And I was just in New York City the week before last, and there's always a special energy in the city that you don't get anyplace else.
Yeah, and Herman Cain is going to be in New York tomorrow as a Koch brother guest to push his agenda and destroy climate legislation.
Of course. I mean, why not? I mean, if we can buy elections, why can't we buy, you know, carbon credits too?
Yeah, good point. You know, Herman Cain's one of my favorite guys, and I know this is way off topic here, but Herman Cain is one of my favorite guys running for president, and you got to hear this. I got to play this clip for you before we get on to the unemployment thing.
We don't need to rewrite the Constitution of the United States, rewrite it. We need to reread the Constitution and enforce the Constitution. And I know that there are some people that are not going to do that, so for the benefit of those that are not going to read it because they don't want us to go by the Constitution, there's a little section in there that talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And he went on to say,
when you get to the part about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, don't stop right there. Keep reading. Because that's when it says, when any form of government becomes destructive of those ideals, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. We've got some altering and some abolishing to do.
Yeah, yeah. The Constitution, Erwin, right there.
Well, it's an intriguing thing to listen to Herman Cain, of all people, talk about the meaning of the original Constitution, because the people who wrote that Constitution had him in mind when they prohibited people that looked like him and came from the places he came from participating in democracy, from voting, and certainly from running for the presidency of the United States.
Well, there you go with your smarty education there.
Well, you know, the pain of this will be eliminated soon, because once these creeps are done destroying the access of regular people, working people, the children of the poor and the workers from having access to a real, true, meaningful, equalizing public education, we won't have to worry about the niceties of what the rest of us have learned, because we will all be so well dumbed down that we can have a democracy again, a democracy that Herman Cain speaks of, not the one his ancestors had, but the one that he has been given as a result of the blood on the streets from the people, working people, who stood up and said no to segregation, who stood up and said no to poll taxes, who stood up and said no to separate but equal, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me, a guy who espouses, and I really don't want to go down this path, but this is where we're going. He also said that any Muslim he would make to take a special oath, Mr. Reread the Constitution.
Well, you know, it is just breathtaking to hear people spout off about the newest forms of segregation with which they can come up. You know, as a member of a minority group myself, I get really scared when people get singled out, not because of the content of their character, but by the singular notion of where they happen to be born or what their ancestry is. And of all people, to hear Herman Cain, an African American, a person whose ancestors came here under duress after being kidnapped and delivered to the shores of North America, having been sold into slavery, it is particularly shocking and breathtaking to hear him talk about others having to take an oath. And we're all familiar in the labor movement. We're all familiar with things like loyalty oaths and red baiting and the McCarthy era and calling people out because we decided that they were communists or Jews or black or what have you. It's bad enough when we hear cretins like Newt Gingrich saying these things. But Herman Cain, of all people, is betraying his ancestors, betraying his very own heritage. And it may well be the most cynical cut of all.
Yeah. Again, for him, from his perspective, I see him out there just trying to make a buck. That's what it's about for me. Let's get back to the Pennsylvania here, because I got to talk about this unemployment thing. Again, you know, I thought that we had, you know, bashed down 916, the big business unemployment comp bill that Representative Scott Perry was trying to ram through. I guess some of that got tampered down, but they're trying to move over some provisions, some of the more radical provisions. Am I got this right?
Well, they're not trying to move them over, Rick. Yesterday morning, in a breathtaking act, the House of Representatives Labor Committee that is skewed with 15 Republicans and only 10 Democrats, so there's no possible way, even among reasonable Republicans, to overcome this onslaught, engrafted virtually all, with only a couple of minor exceptions, of the Perry poison into a Senate bill that was aimed predominantly, but not exclusively, at continuing to keep Pennsylvania qualified for the extended benefit program to assure that totally federally funded benefits for 45,000 long-term unemployed in Pennsylvania would continue. And they had grafted in committee by a party line vote the most heinous and ridiculous and obnoxious and painful and perverse aspects of the Perry poison into what is now known as Senate Bill 1030. From the people who brought you House Bill 916, we have Senate Bill 1030 as amended, and the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO and the Pennsylvania State Building Trades and virtually every worker voice in this state have already come out and asked their members to get on the phones, get on the email, fire up their motorcycles and automobiles and go visit their state house members over this weekend, because come Monday morning, there is going to be a move to try to do it again. What we beat before, they're going to try to do it again. And there are, candidly, a broad-based coalition of Democrats and right-thinking, correct, not right-wing, but correct-thinking, Republicans who are prepared to fight this on the floor if they must. And believe me, Senate Bill 1060, as it came to the House before they imposed the Perry poison, was no day at the beach. It also contains benefit cuts and eligibility restrictions that are outrageous, but in the context of the political landscape we find ourselves in today, they were at least palatable in the sense of trying to get over this hurdle and ensure that the extended benefit program, which I spoke a few seconds ago, would continue in Pennsylvania and continue, of course, at the expense of Washington instead of us sending Pennsylvania dollars down to Washington so they can be redistributed to Arkansas and Mississippi. So here they go again, not satisfied that they were trounced a week and a half ago when the Perry bill, in an unprecedented move, was beaten in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives on second consideration by a forced roll call vote. They're doing it again. And this time, add to the hall of shame not only Scott Perry, who tells us when he was on your show that he's one of your regular listeners, but add to that Representative Miller, the chair of the House Labor Committee, who was the principal sponsor of the Perry poison amendments to the Senate Bill 1030.
You know, what I'm trying to figure out is why is it that maybe it's, you know, we're not getting the message out enough. Why aren't we seeing those 45,000 people who are going to be affected by this screaming at the top of their lungs?
Because they can't afford to make choices between medicine and milk, much less get on the phone. They can't pay their phone bills, Rick. These are people who have been victimized beyond victimization in an economy that has betrayed them. It's an economy that betrayed them because the Wall Street bankers who have made all their dough back from the crash they created are still holding on to that money instead of being compelled to invest it in jobs to put folks back to work.
Yeah, point well taken. But you know, at some point, don't we have to bring them out? I mean, because you know, in past, and maybe you'll be able to tell me a little bit better. But you know, in the past, you looked at the Coxey Army thing a couple of times that happened. You looked at people coming out and like they did in Wisconsin and really drawing attention to this. I mean,
well,
those people
keep,
I talk to.
Keep your ear to the ground and your eyes peeled, because I have a really good reason to believe and expect that come this weekend that that's going to happen. But they don't have to be here in Harrisburg. They have to be talking to the people who represent them
right
at home. And there is this shocking reality that keeps on being played for us over and over again. These folks get elected to the General Assembly, and at home they talk moderate. At home they talk people orientation. At home they talk about a government that helps people do the things they can't do for themselves. And they come to Harrisburg and they pursue the Perry poison. So we got to expose them, and that's exactly what's happening. And I suspect in the next couple of days we're going to see it happen just like we did last year when the same creeps decided that they were going to strip cops and firefighters of their access to their pensions, and they got visited at home over the weekend before they were compelled to vote, and amazingly enough, the police and firefighters did what they needed to do with great support from public sector unions and private sector unions, from teachers and roofers, from auto workers and steel workers and plumbers and pipe fitters and painters and paper hangers and glaziers and electricians and welders and boilermakers and carpenters, who standing tall and standing together shoulder to shoulder, just as we have been in the last several weeks on the unemployment compensation bill, paid a visit, made a phone call, went door to door in their legislators' districts, not with fat cat lobbyists or pro-lobbyists, you know, professional lobbyists even from the labor movement, but with rank-and-file workers. And that's the story. I watched yesterday in the Pennsylvania Capitol, intriguingly enough. Didn't get reported on in the news because it wasn't startling, but there was yesterday in Pennsylvania's Capitol a building trades apprenticeship day in the state capitol, and several hundred apprentices indentured to apprenticeships in virtually every construction trade and craft were in the Capitol talking about and explaining their unique apprenticeship programs, where young people get trained over 4- and 5-year programs that are very highly structured, very appropriately regulated, and privately funded without government money whatsoever. And a couple of those young people, I was with them, a couple of the boilermakers and a couple of the painters and glaziers apprentices sought out their own state house members and explained this unemployment compensation situation far better than I ever could. Explained how, as apprentices, in order to get their hours in, they're traveling from central and south central Pennsylvania to New Jersey and to Virginia and to Maryland and to West Virginia and to New York just to get work, even sometimes for only a day or two, to get those hours in that they want to work. They don't want this unemployment compensation.
Right.
They don't want dole. They don't want the unemployment insurance that they've paid for.
And that is the underlying message that should be here. I don't think the unemployed want to be unemployed, which is what the right has done a masterful job framing, that these people are just lazy and they don't want to work. That's not the reality. The reality is there are not jobs out there.
Well, you know what, Rick? Interestingly enough, I had occasion earlier today to speak not to a Democrat but a Republican House member who recognizes this with crystal clarity. He said to me, you know what, Irwin, I can't imagine why the members of the General Assembly are being whipped up on this when we have so many real problems. The maximum, the absolute maximum that any employer pays into the unemployment compensation system on behalf of a worker in any year is a grand total of about $700. And that's for an employer that's had a lousy record and has very high experience in workers employed by that employer losing their jobs through layoff.
Yeah, my workers' comp is, or my unemployment comp is $200 a year.
Yeah. I mean, the absolute far-out maximum, okay, the average is $212 or $213 a year that employers pay into the system. That means we're talking about something less than 2 or 3 cents an hour on a full-time worker, okay, over the course of a year.
But how does this bill that they're ramming through, how is this going to solve the problem? How is this going to make the system...
It's not. The system will remain bankrupt, but we will have at the same time cynically denied seasonal workers their access to unemployment compensation.
So the $143 million in quote-unquote savings, again, is something we're going to steal from people.
Oh, 100 cents of every dollar of that so-called savings will be stolen from people. But as I've indicated in other conversations you and I have had on this show, it's really being stolen from our local communities, because it's not as if people who qualify for unemployment compensation are spending that money on picking the next high-tech stock that they're going to buy, or using it to pay for a vacation or a new Rolls Royce or Bentley. People are spending that money in their local community to keep body and soul together. They're spending that money in their local community to buy shoes for the kids. They're spending that money in the local community to put groceries on the table, to pay their rent, sometimes even to pay part of their real estate property taxes, yeah, that support these local communities, that pay for the cops and firefighters that we depend on. There is not a penny of unemployment compensation insurance benefits that are paid to people that are socked away in savings accounts or used to make luxury discretionary purchases.
You mean they're not investing on Wall Street?
Well, they'd love to be investing on Wall Street, but the people who invest on Wall Street are the people who put them in this position in the first place to need unemployment insurance.
Yep.
And there it goes. So we're not merely stealing $143 million from the victims of this rotten economy that was imposed on them, but we're stealing it from the businesses in their local communities that depend on them for the support that they get and to keep other people working. When you cut $143 million worth of unemployment compensation from this economy, you're doing one thing that we can count on. You're creating more unemployment. But it's okay, because the next round of unemployed will be victimized yet again. They won't be able to qualify for unemployment insurance benefits.
Quite a scheme they got there. Let me ask you, I got about 2 minutes left here. I wanted to get to this workers' comp bill that they're trying to ram through. Again, as I'm seeing it, about 95% of the injured workers are probably never going to see their own doctor if this passes.
Well, you know, it's amazing that the people who advocate this captive period, that if you happen to get hurt at work, you happen to get hurt trying to earn a living, you happen to be a victim of the workplace, you would have to go to the employer's designated doctor for a minimum of 180 days. And that's obviously a dramatic increase from the present. But as far back as 1972, with the passage of the first real workers' compensation reform in the 20th century, after the adoption of the Workers' Comp Act in 1915, there was 0 days of captive period, no days of captive period. But now the people who are advocating this 180-day captive rule, where you'd be denied access to your own doctor, are the same people who told us last year, when we were attempting to pass a health insurance law, universal health insurance law, that the problem with it is that the government was going to tell you who you had to go to see. So somehow or another, if the government, who we get to elect, has some input in our medical treatment, that's wrong. But if your employer, who has you under its thumb, tells you who you have to see because you got hurt trying to make money for them, that's very right.
That's weird. I mean, you listen to the logic there, and it just, there's nothing there, man.
Well, there's nothing there because there's something there, and the something there is follow the money. This week, the Pennsylvania State Building and Construction Trades Council had its statewide legislative conference, and it took place in a meeting room at the Hilton Hotel on Market Square in Harrisburg. And right next door to that building trades conference was a conference sponsored by the Insurance Federation of Pennsylvania, the IFP. You know, the people who are bringing you this workers' compensation poison. The people who think that everybody who is still working and not a malingerer and bum collecting unemployment compensation is just trying to find a way to get hurt, trying to earn a living, so that they can collect workers' compensation, because that's what everybody wants to do. Nobody wants a job. Nobody wants to support their families. Nobody wants to make their mortgage payments. Nobody wants their kids to have access to a better education. And nobody, but nobody wants their kids to have a chance to go to day camp for a couple days a week once school's out this summer and maybe breathe the fresh air. Maybe the next thing we should do is repeal the child labor law so we can get those kids in there taking their parents' jobs.
Don't give them any ideas. There are Republicans across this country who are pushing for just that.
Well, listen, the legislative director of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, somebody you know, Bethany Evans, yesterday said something to me, and it rings true. Bethany suggested instead of this death by a thousand cuts, maybe what we ought to do is just get somebody to put up legislation to repeal the 20th century.
I'm right there. I've been saying that for the longest time because that's exactly what they're working at doing.
Yeah, but they're doing
piece by piece.
They're doing it piece by piece, and the reason they're doing it piece by piece is they can collect campaign contributions and free dinners and free whiskey from the lobbyists who represent all the industries that will benefit by all these things. So they want to keep these balls in the air just a little bit, because by keeping the balls in the air, the money and the whiskey keeps flowing. And if that sounds cynical, it's only because it is.
That's what I was going to tell you. It sounds like a very cynical position you've got there, Erwin.
Well, I'm living in a cynical world, pal, and I was looking through, on the context of this unemployment compensation garbage that we're facing right now, I was looking at, earlier today, the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO Committee on Political Education newsletter from October of 1971. The issue that came out just after the passage of the unemployment compensation reforms that took place in the very first year of the administration of former Governor Milton J. Schaap. And it just blew me away to realize that in 1972 we were fighting exactly the same series of issues that they've put on the table again. And the only reason that we are fighting them now is because we repealed them in 1971 after the 1964 Scranton-Ripper Bill. So here we are. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And you know who the agent provocateur was then?
Who was that?
The Pennsylvania Chamber of Commerce, the predecessor to the present-day Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry. You know, the people that wrote the Scott Perry Poison Bill.
Yep. I'm not surprised by that. I mean, that's their loyalty.
Not to
the U.S., which is why I don't call them the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They're the International Chamber of Commerce, because they have no allegiance to this country.
Well, they have no allegiance to this country, and they certainly have no allegiance to the people who break their backs working in this state. But more significantly, this is all a story about just meanness, because there is no real savings to be had by stripping people of benefits and denying them eligibility for unemployment insurance. There's no good that comes to Pennsylvania businesses for it. It's just so that we can send a message that we still have you under our thumb, that we can grind you down anytime we want, because, as we said a couple minutes ago, we're talking about pennies. And even if that $143 million they're talking about was true savings, which it is not, it's as I've described, when we have a debt to the federal government of $3.6 billion, with a B, dollars, do you realize how insignificant $143 million is? That $143 million is not one day's worth of interest on that debt. But we can take it out of people's pockets, we can condemn them, and we can tell them that it's not the responsibility of the business community that creates unemployment to pay the unemployment insurance benefits that they've contracted to pay. We're instead going to put these people on welfare.
Which is why we need to contact our representatives, we need to write letters to the editor, and we need to get out into the streets and do something.
Yeah.
This is where the fight is, and this is, it's the fight of our time.
Fight of our lives, Rick. It's not just the fight of our time.
Excellent point. Erwin, always great to talk to you. Very insightful. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
And I appreciate you doing this on your show. It's the most important public service that I know of. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
America. Rick Smith.
You've reached Jenny in the Accounts Receivable Department of Dent Supply International. I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as I'm available.
Jenny was in constant pain and missing too much work.
I wasn't reliable. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't be what I wanted to be. I knew that I could do my job better. I knew that I could be a better mom. I could be a better wife. But my body wasn't letting me.
Fortunately, Jenny's employer has Capital Blue Cross. And Capital gave Jenny a whole set of services called Better Health Works. Jenny filled out a profile, got online coaching, and called a nurse line.
She talked me out of a very dark time because I didn't know what else to do. Since I had my surgery, now I can give my employer and my family 110% of me.
Capital's Amy Montgomery is happy that Jenny is happy.
It feels great that Capital Blue Cross was able to help Jenny this way.
We really believe in what we do, and I think that that's one of the things that makes us successful. I think it's a perfect example of when you care more, you do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
One 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the FreedomWorks people, the right-wing Koch brother-funded attack group FreedomWorks, are out there. That's Dick Armey's group, right? They're in with the whole Americans for Prosperity, all of that together. The ones that Glenn Beck calls a progressive group, which I'm still trying to figure that out. But again, you know, I guess he just reads what's on the card. But they had their big rally today. They're going to draw the line in the sand, even though there was no sand. But they were able to pull about 10 people from outside the state to their big press conference, one they have been promoting for several months now. 4 or 5 months they've been promoting this thing, going, we're going to have a big rally of people. They're all going to come. All 10 of them from outside, paid staff probably from outside the state. Then they had the one they had up in Scranton. They had about 15 people who came to their big FreedomWorks rally because we're going to take back the state. And in Shippensburg, they just had one. And nobody showed up. So there's this, you know, all there's all this outrage out there, of course. And, you know, they point out that PSEA President Jim Testerman makes a boatload of money. And he does. He makes a good living. And we get that. We know, you know. When you Google Jim Testerman's name, it's the seventh thing on Google. So, hey, thanks for exposing what it is I could have found on my own. Thanks for Googling for me, because I could have done that on my own. And I guess they've been talking to guys like Tim Pawlenty, who thinks you should ask Google everything. You know, ask Google everything. You know, he's the guy who says, well, the government shouldn't do anything. I can Google for myself. Well, thank you, FreedomWorks, for helping me Google something. Very nice of you. Also, I think one thing that they planned on highlighting is Republicans who take teachers' money. They were out there and they said, well, you know, there are these Republicans who are holding this all up. Because evidently, the money from teachers, somehow dirty. And if you look at the numbers, and thanks to the people over at followthenumbers.org, we find out that PSEA did give a good amount of money, and a lot. Now that's the way it works. Our officials have decided that in Pennsylvania, you can have unlimited donations. And that's a problem we should be addressing. The reality is PSEA did give 141 Republicans money. So FreedomWorks, in their infinite wisdom and their power of 15 or 10 or 3 or 4 people from inside the state with the 7 or 8 staffers from outside the state, you know, the power of the dozen, all from out of the state, they had this big press conference where they were going to call those Republicans out. They were going to make sure that everyone knows, all of the handfuls know, that these Republicans took money. And if you look at the numbers, PSEA did donate about $1.1 million, all in Pennsylvania, all PA money, all money that came from teachers and administrators and people who are in the Education Association here in Pennsylvania, about $1.1 million. On the other side of this, these Student First people, this Student First PAC, well over $5.5 million. And we have no idea where that money came from. And I'd go out on a limb. I would say very little of it from inside Pennsylvania. I would say most of that money probably came from the billionaire class. The people who run FreedomWorks, the people who push out that the American Federation for Children, like the DeVos woman, you know, all of these tinky tanks, all that money. And I thought it was funny. One of the paid staffers for FreedomWorks really, you know, again, in a very comical way, had one of these statements that just kind of made you go, there were only a handful of people there.
Politics goes to those who show up, and frankly, that with the school choice movement, people are starting to show up.
Really? You had like 10 people there. There were like 10 people. Now, on the other, I've seen thousands of workers. I mean, at one point, there were about 5,000-6,000 workers at one rally. We've seen thousands of people coming out against this budget. We saw 4,000 students coming out against Corbett's policy. I've only seen a handful of people for this SB1. I'm not getting it. So who are these people coming out for the Republican Party? Who are these policy peep wonks, these handfuls? Where are all these people?
Politics goes to those who show up, and frankly, that with the school choice movement, people are starting to show up.
I'm not seeing it. I've seen a couple, a handful of tweets. I've seen a couple of Facebook posts. You know, I've seen a little bit. I haven't seen the people showing up, which is kind of weird to me when the guy's coming, when he's trying to say that, well, you know, politics is about showing up, and nobody's showing up. So if nobody shows up, it's kind of like the bear in the woods thing. If nobody shows up, do they really care? Now, you stop and think about it. We've seen thousands of people coming out against the right-wing radical agenda. Thousands. Yet on the other side, I remember one rally, which was for the EITC, the Education Investment Tax Credit. They had a couple of hundred. And the FreedomWorks people tried to co-opt that by, here, hold this sign and we'll take a picture. Here, you hold this sign and we'll pretend like all these 200-300 people, they're here for us. And we'll put it on our website. We'll say, yeah, look what we did. When in reality, you're just a handful of people from out of state trying to co-opt somebody else's rally. It's pretty amazing to me. And here again, I say the FreedomWorks people are just plain nuts. But again, and look, they need jobs like anybody else. I wouldn't want to see them on the unemployment rolls. So I'm glad that Spiels on Wheels has a job. Good for him. But he's an out-of-stater. He's going to come here and say, oh, well, we're doing something. It's just nuts.
I know you've seen the thousands of students that have gathered here multiple times. We've been with them.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Spiels. Not seeing them. I didn't see the thousands. The thousands I did see, college students saying, don't steal my future. That's what I saw. I haven't seen that many people coming out and saying, oh, please, please destroy public education. Oh, yes, steal money from local schools to give to for-profiteers. Yes, we want FreedomWorks to succeed. And I know you need to promote yourself over there at FreedomWorks because you really haven't taken any base here. You really haven't gotten a foothold. Most of the people over on the Hill think the group's a joke here. But the reality is, and look, all you need to do is look at the news reports. And the Morning Call ripped FreedomWorks. The Business Wire people ripped into them even. You know, saying there's basically nobody here. At some point, don't you have to just say, you know, we're doing this for a job. We don't buy it. It's a job.
I guess it was just a couple of weeks ago, the SB1 advocates had a rally. They happened to come, for lack of a better word, they commandeered this group of children that was there for an award, and they kind of shepherded them into their area of the Capitol where they were having and they gave them signs. And many of the children didn't even know why they were there.
Making my point.
I mean, it was...
That's exactly what happened.
For lack of a better word, the apt description was it was pretty pathetic.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is pathetic. And I saw this story over at the American Independent. They reported the headline, FreedomWorks pushing passage of PA school voucher bill at state capitol. And one of the things in there from FreedomWorks, they said, like in past conversations with the American Federation of Children, TIA, which is the American Independent, asked if FreedomWorks has attempted to reach out to labor groups. And our buddy Spiels on Wheels, Spielman, says that the organization has invited unions to the negotiating table before, yet they were unanswered. And exactly who is FreedomWorks in the state of Pennsylvania? Oh, Spiels' buddy here, he's from out of town. He's an out-of-stater. What exactly is he negotiating? What does he have to negotiate with? What is it that FreedomWorks has to negotiate? Not to mention, again, they're not from here. Their money isn't from here. They have no clue what's going on here. They're another one of these D.C.-based groups that are pushing the billionaire agenda, pushing the profiteer agenda. But, you know, they think that they should be sitting across the table from the labor unions. And look, if they came to me and said, we're going to sit down and negotiate with you, I would tell them to get the flip out of here. Because you've got nothing to negotiate. And what you want to do, what these people are aiming at doing, is destroying public education. They are doing the bidding of the billionaire class. These are the useful idiots. These are the ones that Jay Gould claimed he could pay to kill the other half. These are the people. These are the ones. These are the people we need to deal with. You know, it was the good old days. And, you know, I'm not advocating violence, but it was the good old days. This is someone who my grandfather would say, you need to make a citizen out of.
Of another issue, Rick, about 2 years ago, almost identical, their modus operandi on health care. Americans for Prosperity.
Same basic
group. Run basically by the same people. They come in here with buses. They come in here with loads of money. They come in here with paid professionals. They stir the troops up. There aren't a lot of troops to stir up, although with health care they had the Tea Party. But the modus operandi is the same thing. Hit and run.
Yep.
Come in, make a big deal about it. Move on to the next state, all around the country.
Yep. Well, if these are paid professionals, they're overpaid. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. We're going to talk with Aaron Gill from PA Health Access about the adult basic. We're back after this.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The June 19th GE contract expiration for some 15,000 union workers is fast approaching as GE continues to push for what the unions say are massive rollbacks in health care, pensions, wages, and other things. Thousands of GE workers, represented by GE Workers United, rallied June 4th in Lynn, Massachusetts, to make it clear they're united against these massive concessions. Jeff Crosby, president of IUECWA Local 201, says GE's CEO serves as President Obama's jobs czar while his company pursues anti-worker tactics.
They've actually eliminated 22,000 jobs in the United States since the last contract. And in addition, because they helped write the tax code, they paid no federal income taxes last year. And in addition, they've got a $3.2 billion tax credit for next year. So there's no financial logic to this.
On Monday and Tuesday, hundreds of registered nurses from 31 states, joined by labor and community allies, gathered outside the White House and picketed the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They rallied near Congress on Tuesday, calling for a new Main Street contract for the American people. National Nurses United says that nurses want living wage jobs for all, equal access to quality public education, guaranteed health care with a single standard of care, a secure retirement with dignity for all, good housing and protection from hunger, the right to organize unions and collectively bargain, and just taxation systems where corporations and the rich pay their fair share. California's domestic workers' rights bill is headed for the state Senate after approval in the House. It would make California the second state to pass a domestic workers' rights bill.
Caring for elderly patients is hard work. Just ask Bustos Chavez. The former live-in caregiver had to bathe, feed, and tend to her clients' every need. That sometimes meant staying up all night with sick patients, as well as bedridden patients, who have to be turned over every 2 hours to prevent bed sores.
Which means to say that you are always awake. It means to say you are deprived from having a good rest.
She says that the lack of sleep poses health risks for both clients and workers.
Taking care of these patients and at the same time you don't feel good, it lessens the performance that you are giving to your client.
The Chavez is among the hundreds of workers throughout California that are demanding legislators pass a domestic workers' bill of rights. The measure would provide overtime pay, uninterrupted sleeping periods, paid sick leave, and workers' compensation. No one knows for sure how many domestic workers live in California, but organizers estimate there are at least 200,000 throughout the nation. The bill was approved in the state assembly last week and is now headed to the Senate. For Workers Independent News, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. But you can't stop the sounds of the truth.
Sure can't kill the protest, and I hope, I gotta tell you, I keep hoping that we see people bringing their sleeping bags like they did in Wisconsin, bringing their tents, setting up little Corbettvilles. I've been waiting to see this, the unemployed, the uninsured, people taking to the streets, people getting out there, and not just here in Harrisburg, but all across this state to be seen. And I got to be honest, that the woman we met during the one protest slash rally, whatever you want to call it, with the folks in the wheelchair, she says, you know, if we're going to die, we're going to die in public. We're going to die for people where people see us. And that has to happen. Absolutely has to happen. And, you know, I look at the First Lady. Could she be the one who talks some sense into our governor? Seems she is on, the question of gutting spending on the arts, when the state's sitting on a half a billion dollar surplus. She says the arts budget is so small in comparison to the rest of the budget, but it has such huge impact on the quality of life. Let's hope she talks to her husband about the $1.1 billion in cuts to basic education, the 56% of higher ed budget that's being cut, the 40-some thousand people booted off adult basic. I wonder, do paintings keep people alive? I don't know. health insurance may, though. That's why I've asked Erin Gill. She's an organizer with Pennsylvania Health Access. PAHealthAccess.org is their website to come talk to us. Erin, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Lay this out for me. Beginning of the Corbett term, he boots all these people off of this very meager insurance to what?
To nothing, pretty much. So the governor's proposed solution was special care, which is 400 times more expensive than adult basic, restricts people to 4 doctor's visits a year, which is really just a joke. And so whereas adult basic, like you said, was pretty skimpy and bare bones to begin with, special care is almost worse than having no coverage, especially if you have any kind of chronic condition, which most of the folks on adult basic, you know, have.
What do you say to those who say, you know, we've already got health care? If someone who's uninsured has no health care, they can go get the care that they need. So, say somebody with diabetes, you know, they need treatment. They just go to the emergency room, right?
That's outrageous. You know, tell me the last time somebody went to an emergency room and got, you know, came out with, you know, testing meter and test strips and, you know, the different medications that cost, you know, sometimes $50 or $60 a pill. I mean, it's just a joke. I mean, you can't get chemotherapy in an emergency room. You can't, you know, you can't manage conditions like high blood pressure and diabetes and, you know, things that really affect the quality of life, you know, with going to an emergency room. It's just, you know, callous and out of touch to even suggest that.
Yeah, but that's the frame that's out there, though. And I've talked to a number of people who say, well, you know, we don't need that. They can just go to the emergency room. And I go, but why would we want that as a society, the most expensive form of treatment? Why can't we have a policy? And look, I look at this adult basic. This wasn't much. It didn't cost us much. And, in fact, it was paid for by money from the Blues, as I understand.
Yeah, it did. So the Blues, and actually to continue adult basic, it would take less than 3% of the Blues combined surplus, and probably even less than that with their, you know, Highmark and IBC's reported, you know, increases in their surplus recently. So we're talking about a drop in the bucket, you know, for them compared to, you know, really losing a lifeline for 40,000 people. And, you know, to your point about folks going to the emergency room, the people that are making that argument about why don't they just go there for their care, I mean, that's the most expensive place. I mean, that's what's driving up healthcare costs is when people have to neglect their health, they can't get preventive care, and they're forced to show up when they're the sickest and most expensive to treat. So, you know, even opponents who want to say, well, let's just let them, you know, go to the emergency room. I mean, that, you know, makes no sense. I mean, obviously a lot of their arguments aren't about making sense, but it's frustrating to say the least.
Now, the folks who were on adult basic, and I think this is an important point, these were low-income working people whose employers did not provide health insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are folks that, are, you know, are at jobs making, you know, between $8 and $12 an hour, don't have access to job-based insurance, or they're self-employed. They have small businesses, you know, they work for themselves, or they have pre-existing conditions and were shut out or flat-out denied, you know, other insurance, you know, even trying to buy it. So, you know, these are working people. They're trying to do the right thing. You know, they're working. You know, the jobs, obviously, that we have now aren't good jobs. They don't come with benefits. And adult basic, you know, really met that need. And obviously the need was huge. There were 500,000 people on the waiting list when it ended. But, you know, we absolutely need something. I think as of right now, less than 30% of the folks that lost their coverage signed up for something else, whether it's special care or whether they were able to qualify for, you know, either medical assistance or MOD for workers with disabilities. So, you know, the problem is not going away.
And we probably made the problem worse because, as you said earlier, you know, if you don't get something taken care of, you know, that whole thing that that guy Ben Franklin used to talk about, that whole, what was it, an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure? We used to know that. What happened to us?
Right. I know. It's incredibly short-sighted and mean-spirited, you know, and it doesn't make any, you know, fiscal sense, you know, for our healthcare spending. And obviously, you know, there's the moral and human cost of it when folks neglect their health. So, you know, there's just no excuse. It's really inexcusable. And, you know, this is not the direction our state needs to be going in. And you know, we got to turn it around.
You said a second ago, and you said a number of how many people were on the waiting list. There were 40-some thousand who were getting the adult basic. How many, again, were on a waiting list to get onto the adult basic?
There was about 500,000.
500,000 people?
Absolutely. And actually, most of the folks, you know, if you look per capita, were in rural areas. So this was not, you know, really slanted heavily in urban areas. You know, these are folks, you know, out who are a lot a lot of the folks that I've talked to were self-employed or, like we talked about, they had jobs that didn't offer insurance. And, you know, that this was their only option, and now they have no options other than to, you know, walk around like ticking time bombs, not knowing, you know, what this symptom might be. And, you know, it's a terrifying situation for them.
Yeah, but it's an interesting point you brought up there, Erin Gill. Of course, you're an organizer with PA Health Access, PAHealthAccess.org. Interesting point you brought up about it not being a urban thing. Most of the folks being in the rural areas. Because, you know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. They had a free clinic there that was sponsored because you had a large volume of people who could be served in a very small area. I would think, you know, the rural areas, which are much more spread out, it'd be much more difficult to have a free clinic type situation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in places like Venango County and Clarion County, you've got to go a long way to access a free clinic. And, you know, I know the health clinic in Butler, the Tribune Review just talked about how since it all basic ended, they've already seen over 100 new patients. So, I mean, there's a clear correlation, you know, folks being shut out, not having any options, and being forced to turn to health centers that are already doing as much as they can with, you know, resources that are threatened both on the federal and state level. So it's just, you know, the problem is getting worse from all angles.
So what's the answer here? I hear a whole bunch of things. Use some money from the Blues, force them to do it. There's a tobacco fund out there. What? Tell me.
Well, our first step is to keep the tobacco fund money separate. We don't want to see it put in the general fund as Governor Corbett wants to, and as the House, the House Republican budget that was passed is that does. We think that's wrong. We don't want to see the money used for other purposes. We definitely don't want to see it go toward a seventh business loan program called Liberty Loans. We're not sure the status of that. We've heard that plan has upset a lot of people on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, the governor's wham.
He's walking around money, yes, that he has discretion over. And, you know, it's just, it's outrageous. And if they love the free market so much, why not let the banks lend the business? But, you know, why take healthcare dollars? But So our first step is keeping that tobacco, you know, money separate. We also want to preserve that 30% within the tobacco money that was going to adult health. And previously it was shared between medical assistance for workers with disabilities and adult basics. So if we can preserve the tobacco settlement money, make sure that, you know, continues to be directed as laid out by Act 77, you know, the current funding allocations, we can hopefully take some of that money that was going toward adult basic and potentially partner with the Blues to improve the benefits of special care. And, you know, if we were going to improve it, you know, we talked about what kind of a plan would be at least more adequate than special care. Try to find somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, whereas, you know, adult basic was more comprehensive, you know, compared to special care, which is hardly anything. So we're hopeful that we can improve the special care benefits package to at least, you know, allow folks, you know, 18 doctors a year and prescription drug testing and not have diagnostic test limits and to cover things like, you know, diabetic testing supplies. So that, you know, that's not the ideal solution, but we think realistically in this kind of political environment, we feel like if we can keep the tobacco money separate, keep 30% to adult health, then we have a shot at, you know, potentially getting the Blues to improve the benefits for special care so that it's, you know, more of a viable option for more people.
Right. I mean, to me, I see no point whatsoever in having insurance if it doesn't cover anything. If when you get sick, it covers nothing. It makes no sense to me.
No, not at all. It's like having insurance with a $5,000, you know, deductible. It's just, what's the point, you know? So this, and, you know, the numbers, the sign-up numbers have really shown that this is not an option for people. So, you know, we have to get something done. We've been really pushing hard on the Senate side of the aisle, really pushing with Republicans since they're in a position to really make this move. We were in Harrisburg today. We met with a lot of folks. And we're continuing to meet in district to bring folks that lost their coverage to share their stories. So that's really, you know, they need to see people, and they need to see, you know, the real human lives and families and situations that people are in now. And that's what our focus is on between now and when the budget's resolved.
And when you get folks like that who want to come out and have their stories heard, please feel free to send them our way, because I think it's important that folks hear those stories, because it could be any one of us at any time.
Absolutely.
At the bottom line. Last question I've got for you. You know, as we're moving down the road, the president in last year we got the Health Care Act passed. 2014 seems to be the time when they're talking about these exchanges or whatever it is they're setting up. How much of this would be solved? How much of this adult basic problem would be solved by having these exchanges and maybe a more comprehensive program for everyone instead of these patchwork systems that we've got, like, you know, like this and some other programs, instead of having just one big one, which is what I'm hoping these exchanges will be in 2014.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's really the ideal solution. That's the place we're working to get to, and that's why we were working so hard to maintain Adult Basic as a bridge to when these exchanges are up and running. But that's another big fight in Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania has a lot of control in how these exchanges are set up. So we can have one that's on the bad end of the spectrum, that's basically like a flea market where anybody's allowed in and the benefits can be whatever, or it can be really strong, negotiate, you know, good rate, quality benefits for people purchasing the insurance, and that's what we're working for. So, but a lot of that still has to be determined, and Pennsylvania has a lot of flexibility in how that's done. So that's also been a big focus of ours, because if the exchanges, you know, in theory they're great, but if Pennsylvania doesn't get it right, then where are we? You know, we're in the same bad
situation. Right back to square one, yep. And it depends on what happens with the Supreme Court. Again, they heard arguments today. We'll see where that takes us. Aaron Gill, I appreciate your time. Organizer with PA Health Access, pahealthaccess.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Sometimes political karma can be so right, even when it applies to something so wrong. Thus it was that Barack Obama became the first U.S. president in history to sign legislation into law without actually signing it. While he was traveling in Europe, Congress passed a bill extending the infamous Patriot Act for another 4 years of secret autocratic invasions of our privacy. The extension passed 15 minutes before midnight on the day the law was to expire. No time to fly it to Obama for his required signature. So, he ordered that his name be affixed by AutoPen. How appropriate that this liberty-busting act be signed into law by a soulless machine rather than, as required by the Constitution, by the actual president. Article 1, Section 7 says that for a president to approve a congressional bill, quote, he shall sign it. As you might expect, this mechanical usurpation of the human hand has driven the cult of Obama delegitimizers nuts. A pretty short ride for them. And some are railing against the high crime of this non-signature. But the real crime is not in how the bill was signed, but that a Democrat in the White House would sign it at all. The Patriot Act is an atrocious, fundamentally un-American little house of horrors concocted by John Ashcroft and Dick Cheney. For Obama to put his name to it legitimizes the national surveillance state as a new bipartisan authoritarian normal over America. This is Jim Hightower saying, Obama's team asserts that this mechanical signing is authorized by a 2005 Justice Department memo that, abracadabra, autocratically declares it okay. Great. An act of raw authoritarianism, hung around America's neck by the authoritarian Bush regime, is now extended on the basis of an authoritarian executive decree by that same regime. Obama has twisted himself into a karmatic pretzel.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. You know, I look at that Adult Basic thing, and again, it's 2014 when these exchanges set up that maybe some of that that pressure goes away. And, you know, you look at how we've dealt with healthcare over the last 30 years in a very Band-Aid fashion. We got a program here, we got a program there, we got a program here, program there. Instead of saying, you know what? Everybody needs health care. How do we get everybody health care? How do we make sure that everybody has it? Nixon, for instance, said, you know what? Every employer should have to provide health care. So if you're an employer, you should have to provide it. And you set up a plan, a place for that to happen. That makes sense on one hand, but what about the people who don't work? What about the people who are self-employed? You know, and I look at this whole thing, and there, again, the need for the Health Care Act, the need for some type of health care policy. It's just like our energy policy. We're so scatterbrained. We're so all over the map. Oh, the invisible man will take care of it. But here is the reality. The reality in this country is if you don't have a job, chances are you don't have health care. And if you don't have health care and you get sick, you are going to get worse, and chances are you are going to die from it. Because you're not going to be able to go to the emergency room and say, oh, take care of me now. I don't have health care. It's not going to happen. And this adult basic thing, it's, you know, we are coming down to the wire, but it's another Band-Aid.
I mean, this is an issue that's near and dear to my heart. And the more you explore it, the more it doesn't make sense. This administration was saying, look, we have bad economic times. We can't be funding it anymore. And then you look at the situation. First of all, the economics are better than the administration has said. You look at the situation, Blue Cross Blue Shield. I believe their surplus is actually, their numbers are actually better than they were 5 years ago. But beyond that, in the next 2 weeks, thanks to an email from this organization, I contacted my senator, Senator Falmer, and their people are saying, look, in the next couple of weeks, it's going to depend what comes out of the budget. So now's a critical time to contact your senators and say, look, there's no reason that the governor is taking money from the tobacco fund. And by the way, according to this organization, I have no reason to believe that they aren't 100% accurate. These Liberty loans, there's six other programs just like it. And they're taking key money out of the tobacco fund that should be going for these people who, by the way, are slipping through the cracks. For those of you who live in another state, this fund was set up for people who don't qualify for Medicaid for the poor, but yet can't afford it. And I believe the numbers, Rick, and I'm pretty sure this is accurate, cost them about $45. Well, it went from $45, and under the governor's program, they gave them the option of a horrible program, increased it 450%, limited them to four. Now, if you have any kind of disease, four doctor's visits isn't adequate enough, and it does nothing for pre-existing conditions. It's basically they threw them a policy that's pretty much useless. It's an insult. People are actually going to be severely hurt, and some of them might die if they're taken off the program that they have, which was a pretty good program. So the next couple of weeks, it's critical that you contact your state senators.
But here again, you know, my problem with the adult basic thing, and I do kind of have a problem with it. It covered 42,000 people. There are 500,000 on the waiting list.
And
the problem is so big. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, another one of these patchwork programs that really leads you to believe, understand the need for an actual, well-thought-out policy. And that's what we were doing during the whole healthcare debate, or we should have been doing. I'm not so thrilled with what we've got. We will see if these exchanges work. We will see how this all works out. But the hope is that we will have that one policy.
Well, and here again, politics rears its ugly head. For all the criticism of Obamacare, they did it right. They gave these states about four or five different options. Depending on who's in control, they can very much limit the effectiveness, and therein lies the problem. And right now we have a bunch of conservatives who don't like a national health care, and I'm just afraid, I hope my fears aren't eventualized, but I'm just afraid that they're going to minimize the coverage out of political animosity towards Obamacare.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? What's on your mind? What do you think about the whole adult basic thing? You know, the governor kicking the people to the curb. Personally, I think it's a disgrace, especially when you're talking about setting up a patronage fund like the governor wants to set up with these Liberty loan, this Liberty fund that he wants to be the sole proprietor of, to, you know, to dole out the patronage. Amazing stuff. And another story of these are our heroes. Remember, these are the people we call heroes. A couple of soldiers did a video, which has now been taken down off the internet, but it was, I got to see it this morning. These, the Staff Sergeant Fred Hilliker and Robert O'Hare, they made this video while on a Delta flight from Baltimore, to, I believe, Atlanta. But here's what happened. They came back from Afghanistan, and they were told that they were going to have, the ability to bring four bags. So they all had four bags, and, you know, they were ready to go home. You know, they've been gone for a while, want to go home. Delta Airlines, the union-busting, anti-union airline, you know what they did? Said, sorry, you're only allowed three bags. And for everyone who has a fourth, we're going to charge you $200 a piece in extra baggage fees. $200. $200. Understand that. $200 per bag. Now, the military, you know, just stepped in. The policy now will be four bags. But the reality is again, you know, I look at this and I go, man, talk about screwing somebody who you're calling a hero. Here we go. It's just mind-numbing. And you go back and you remember the whole discussion about the 9/11 responders. The folks who went to that smoldering asbestos toxic pit to look for survivors and to help rebuild that area, and the lung problems they're having and all the ailments, all the suffering that they had, took nearly 10 years to make sure that they're going to get health care. You look at the story we talked about last night, the service people who need health care through the VA, and the VA saying, well, you know, we don't want to be like that General Motors who turned into a healthcare company who occasionally made a car. We don't want to be a healthcare company who occasionally kills a terrorist. So we're going to have to talk about how do we screw those people out of the benefits that we promised. Again, you know, I'm amazed. I'm amazed at how easy the right and politicians think we can go back on our word. How easy contracts are broken when it's for those little people, when it's for you and me. I'm absolutely amazed at how easy it is to just sign it away. You look at all those pension funds throughout the years that bankruptcy judges said, you know what? Nope, all gone. You CEOs, you keep your pay, you keep your bonus, because after all, the companies need to keep qualified people. Need those qualified CEOs that drove that company into the ground. But you folks who did the hard work and actually created the wealth, well, your pensions are gone. You can go on the back of the PBGC. You'll get about 35-40% of what you were promised because it's all gone now. You retirees who the company said, you know what, we're going to make sure that you have health care. All gone now. What happened to the days when we used to keep our promise? You know, my grandfather always said, there's really, as a man, you got two things in this world. You got those little dangly things, and you got your word. And you don't break either one of them for anyone or anything. And what happened to that mentality? What happened to my word is my bond? As a nation, have we lost that? Have we lost our promise? Have we lost our dignity? Have we lost our word?
I think you're looking at the word is, have we lost our soul? And I see some people seem to think we're on our way. We've got some severe problems. And one of them is we don't take care of our own people. And that is a very, very dangerous thing indeed.
All in the name of another buck. All in the name of more profit. All in the name of me, instead of we. That's the recipe for destruction. You know, when we stop becoming Americans and we continue being me, the individual. That whole mantra, that whole Reagan, we're the individual. That whole rugged individual mentality that the right loves to throw out there. except when it's time for corporations to fail. Then we love to rush in with taxpayer money and bail them out. And look, you know, I'll be honest with you, not in favor of the bank bailouts. The auto bailouts I had some problems with, but you know what? The auto bailouts actually benefited the workers, so I'm okay with that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Hamilton Nolan, editor at Gawker.com, about a couple of pieces he's written over there. Again, their big story, it's Wienergate. They've seen the wiener's wiener. We're back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, in New York, they've got Target employees who are in the process of organizing, joining, forming a union, looking for better wages, hours, and conditions. Did you think, when I was talking about New York, did you think I'd be talking about the wiener? Because I think today, anybody who's talking about anything in New York, it's always got to be the wiener. And that seems to be what our whole culture right now is hung up on. And I look over at Gawker.com, and that's all it is. It's wieners, wieners, and more wieners. I gotta wonder where the hard news is. Hard news. Yeah, good. That's funny. somebody sent me a tweet of a Google map where in New Zealand, evidently somebody took a weed killer and made a giant wiener. I don't know if it was wiener's wiener, but it's a wiener anyway. But over at Gawker.com, they have really some good stories, not on the front page today. That's why I've asked their editor, Hamilton Nolan, to come talk to us. He's written a couple of really excellent pieces. Back in January, the piece, The Plan to Blame Unions for Everything, and now Slowly Killing My Soul, Life at Target. Nolan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this, and you know, I understand Gawker is a pop culture site. You don't often see hard-hitting stories about workers.
You know, we try to have a good mix. We're pretty open. Obviously, we cover the we have to cover the Wiener news first, obviously. We do try to get all types of stories in there. So, I've done some stories about Walmart in the past along the same lines as this. So, when the news about the Target union broke, you know, I decided to give Target a shot also.
Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent story at that. I mean, how many people have you how many people have contacted you? Because I got to be honest, I look at Gawker. It's not somewhere where I would think is a pro worker site. Are you seeing many people coming to you and saying, hey, thanks for that? Or what feedback have you been receiving?
Yeah, I mean, I think on one level it's just a testament to how little how few opportunities there are out there for people like a Target worker to really get their voice out. I mean, I did a couple of stories, just regular stories talking about the news of the Target union. And I just asked people to email me if they, were Target workers and just tell me their story, you know, and I got dozens and dozens and dozens of, emails from people who either work at Target now or have worked at Target in the past, just talking about their experiences there, you know, the problems that they'd had, you know, what life is like as a Target worker and, you know, their opinion on unions. And I mean, there was a fair amount of variation, in their opinions, but, there was a lot of common themes in their stories. So, I think it really just says, you know, people want to get their voice heard.
Well, at the end of the day, in reading through the article, it comes back down to the reason that people join unions. Hours, wages, right. Conditions. And I go back to my grandmother who worked in a union place much like Target, you know, a long time ago. Back in 1985, she was making $8 an hour with full health, full dental, full eye, 6 weeks vacation. Back in 1985, we're talking, 26 years ago, and I'm not seeing Target making that now.
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't think there's been very much progress since then, and it was funny. I mean, a common theme and a lot of what the Target workers want is more hours, it's hard to say anything bad about a worker who's asking for more hours at
right.
the job, I mean, these are people who are making very kind of basic requests. I mean, they want to be treated with respect. They want a decent wage. I mean, I don't think any Target worker thinks they're going to get rich working there, but, a semi-living wage and enough hours to keep the lights on, and that's really what the demands came down to.
So the request for hours, that have anything to do with healthcare?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the healthcare situation is at Target. I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking to hear from, there's obviously some people who are the high school kids and the college kids who are just working there on the weekends, but the people who are actually trying to raise a family on a Target salary is kind of a heartbreaking ordeal, and I heard from people who, were fired for, taking maternity leave and, people who were fired for taking time off to go pick up their kids, and it's a rough haul.
And I look at this and, for the longest time, people have been advocating for Target as an alternative to Walmart. Are you seeing the same themes that the folks at Walmart or at Walmart Watch and the people who have been going after Walmart have been putting out? Is it basically the same thing, just with a different name on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'd covered Walmart for many years before this, and I feel like Target has gotten a bit of a free pass from probably the media as a whole, just because they're not the number one that Walmart is, and that was really one of the things that interested me in the story in the first place, is just the question of, is Target just Walmart with a coat of red paint on it? And I have to say, from the perspective of the employees that I'm hearing from, basically, yes. I mean, there's really not a lot of differences that I've seen between what the Target employees are talking about and what the Walmart employees were talking about when I did this story over there, a year or so ago. It's poor wages, it's poor working conditions, it's people who feel disrespected by their bosses and people who just basically want a living wage for their job.
you know, are they as vehemently opposed to organized labor as Walmart? Because Walmart will come in, they'll shut down entire departments, they'll shut down stores like they did up in Canada. Is Target the same mindset? I'm assuming they are because they, you know, they're basically the same kind of company. I'm just curious.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, Walmart is so well known for being so anti-union, and I had never really looked into the question of how anti-union Target is. And, you know, one of the first things I started hearing about Target when I started looking into this story was that every employee they hire has to watch an anti-union video, you know, as part of the training. And there was a lot of people who kind of made fun of how corny this anti-union video is, but, you know, every employee has to watch it. And, you know, employees are told to basically turn in anyone who is discussing unionization, you know, at work. And these people, you know, the Target employees have told me, you know, I don't know what the official Target policy is, but the employees tell me that if people discuss unions at the job, you know, they basically get reported to the bosses, and those they find a way to...
They show them the door.
Out of the company, right. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the short answer is yes. You know, Target is as anti-union as Walmart is, but they've kind of enjoyed a more liberal reputation, I guess, just which basically comes down to their branding more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm under the impression that Target is a French company. Is that right?
Well, they're from Minnesota, so I guess that's roughly the same.
Oh, no, I thought they were originally started as from a French company.
Oh, I don't know. You know, I know they had their roots up in Minnesota, and they had a change in ownership. You know, I guess a decade or so ago, and the original founders got kind of eased out. And you know, I heard that the original founders of Target actually had a really good reputation, and that when the company sort of changed hands, you know, the employees said around, you know, roughly 10 years ago, a lot of the employees told me they saw a definite marked change, you know, and Target kind of lost its sort of whatever family atmosphere that it had, you know, was kind of turned into a cold and corporate place, which I guess is inevitable for how big of a company it is now.
Yeah, well, I guess once you get that big, that's what you have to do. But again, you know, I'm curious, as you move forward, will you be doing more pro-worker stories like this? Because it seems you have gotten a fairly good response to this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's an important issue. I mean, you know, we just went through this recession, and you know, if that's not an opportunity for organized labor, then I don't know what is. You know, I've done the story with Walmart and had a lot of feedback for that, and got a lot of feedback for this one with Target also. So, yeah, I mean, I think I would like to look at some other stores, you know, and obviously if the unions get together enough to try to organize some of these chains, I mean, that's kind of throwing a bone to people like me in the media, you know, to go out and get these stories. I mean, to a certain extent, you need a bit of a news peg for it. So, you know.
Because given what I've seen, you seem to be the pro-worker guy over there at Gawker.com. Your piece back in January, A Plan to Blame Unions for Everything, was an excellent piece. I mean, the reality is the message that the right keeps putting out is that somehow we in the working class have to destroy those unions for our own good, which is amazing to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, you know, I got that from my dad, who was a big pro-union guy back in the day, and, you know, we're good liberals over at Gawker. I think we talk about a lot of frivolous things, but, you know, it's an important issue, and I mean, I think the issue suffers in the media from the fact that it's kind of, it's not really considered a glamorous issue, and it's hard to keep it alive without some, you know, sensationalized element, but, you know, it's important, and it's, you know, there's people like Stephen Greenhouse at the New York Times who, you know, covers those issues, and it's important to have, you know, at least a few people in the media, even invisible, because, it's just the kind of thing that it's always there, but it's, not always in the spotlight, you know.
Well, it's important that guys like you get these stories out, and places like Gawker are willing to run, worker stories, and I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate your time. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it happen.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. So I was wrong. I checked during the break. Evidently, Target is not a French company. Kind of chuckle there. It says on the Wikipedia page, and I don't know how much you can buy into Wikipedia. The thing you can change by the minute. Just ask Sarah Palin's people who tried to change Paul Revere's Ride into a Wild West show. But it says, you know, it's a popular misconception, and I was misconceived, if you will. But, you know, you look at these stories, and they're important. It's important for workers to see this stuff, especially younger workers, that unions can and do make people's lives better, which is why I keep bringing up my grandmother, who back in 1985, and this is, you know, it's written down in paper. She made $8 an hour, which is 26 years ago, full health care. Full dental, full eye, 6 weeks vacation. She was there 20-some years. They don't make that kind of money now, 26 years later, because the Walmarts of the world came in and undercut everybody. This cutthroat competition came in and destroyed the living standards of workers. So all of those big profits that the Walmart family have been pocketing, that's what it's about. That is what it's about. And the fact that we don't make anything anymore. Did you see this? I was a big fan as a kid of Lost in Space. Did you ever watch Lost in Space when you were a kid? The Robinsons and, you know, Dr. Smith and the robot. They used to have these jet packs, mm-hmm. that they would hook on the sun, they'd fly around with. This fall, you're going to be able to buy your very own personal jetpack, just like on Lost in Space. It's going to be about $100,000, but they have now perfected this, and they're showing people flying all around with them. I can't wait till I make $100,000 I can buy one. Probably not going to happen. But you'll need to know. The Saigon Daily News. And the reason I bring this up is evidently in Saigon, they think it's important to point out the fact that the Chinese are flooding the Vietnamese market with a mass of cheap, poor quality, and toxic Chinese toys. Their media seems to care that the toys that their children are playing with are cheap, poor quality, and toxic. But as the story in the Saigon Daily points out, regardless, they write, stores continue to sell the goods for their high profit margin, knowing fully well of the dangers of the toxic poisoning to children who play with these toys tainted with toxic chemicals like DEHP or lead, which causes cancer or sterility. And they go through and they say, look, you know, domestically made toys. This is Vietnam who's saying we're being destroyed by China. They're stealing our industry. Man, I'll tell you, it's just plain nuts. And you look at the fact that most, when I was a kid, every toy was made in this country. Barbie was made here. Those big things, those big boobs, they were conceived here. Now, out of the 18 different lines of Barbie, 6 of them are made in China, 12 of them are made in Indonesia. Not one made here.
All boys can relate to playing baseball. And what are the three things? Ball, glove, bat.
All made overseas.
Bats, Louisville Slugger, made there. Gloves, Wilson's.
Rawlings.
McGregor's, Rawlings. All made in the United States. Now all made overseas. Balls, yep, made overseas. And it's America's game. America's game.
Not anymore. Not if the China has anything to do with it. Here's some good news for you folks who like to think we're number one, because we can basically right now beat everybody up, or we can bomb them. China, right now, is pursuing and has been confirmed that they are working on their first aircraft carrier. They have purchased a Soviet-era carrier, 990 feet long. They lied about how to get it through the Turkish-controlled straits, and because it's just going to be a casino. Don't worry about us. We're just bringing it through. Well, they are now going to have their very first aircraft carrier, and their Lieutenant General, and I'm not even going to bother trying to say his name, he's the assistant chief of the People's Liberation Army, their general staff. He says, you know, we're not going to sail in other waters. No. But all of the great nations in the world own aircraft carriers. They are a symbol of a great nation. Understand what that means. And we, you know, hey, we gave it to him, man. We're the ones who did this.
No, we gave him the technology.
We gave him the manufacturing base, the intellectual ability to do it, the capacity to have a broad manufacturing base that we've lost. And I shouldn't say lost. We gave it away.
You and I have talked numerous times, and it still bothers me that we have had working agreements, we meaning American corporations, multinationals based here in the United States, state-of-the-art technology, and they've worked with the Chinese. Now, what would prevent the Chinese from then converting that technology to military use? And the answer is pretty much nothing. And you can bet that they will utilize some of the technology that they acquired working with our company.
You mean when General Electric signed an agreement to work on aircraft with a Chinese company,
yep,
who didn't,
yep,
have the technology, but
we gave it to them.
We basically handed it over
for a few shillings, 30 pieces of silver. I guess my question is,
we made those investors happy
on this aircraft carrier. For the moment, where are they getting their planes?
The story doesn't say. I don't know. I would say France, probably.
I would guess, because they are one of the largest international arms.
That would be my guess. And then it's purely probably the Russians. Probably the Russians, since that's where they got the aircraft carrier. So, you know, there you go. Good luck. But it really does highlight the fact that we need to have an initiative to reinvigorate our manufacturing base, to grow our manufacturing base. And today the president was out touting this idea that we need to sharpen our skills. And he's put out a couple initiatives to be coordinated by the Skills for America's Future, which is a business and community college partnership that works with the Aspen Institute there in Washington and Colorado to get people, you know, discovering what skills they have, raise awareness about job opportunities, and what skills are needed. Kind of get out there and, you know, tell people what the next line of jobs are. And, you know, maybe sharpen some of those skills. Start looking at, hey, how can we make sure that people get the skills that they need? Who's going to make those next generation hybrid cars? Who's going to make that next generation of solar panel that's going to be able to create more energy than they do now? Who's going to be, you know, the next person to invent the things that we need? And, you know, I went to one of these sites and it went through a number of the great innovations that were born here in the U.S. And I got to be honest, I was like, well, yeah, that was made here. And it was something that was revolutionary. Unfortunately, we don't make them here anymore. The light bulb. We don't even make that here, but maybe a handful here anymore. You know, the telephone. How many cell phones are made in the U.S.? None. How many of your home phones are made in the U.S.? Almost none. Automobiles. You know, you go back and you look at how many cars are being made overseas. Again, we invented this technology, and yet we're getting our behinds kicked. The airplane. We invented the airplane. Yet, here again, another one of those things that we seem to just kind of let that go. Why? Because we allowed for-profit corporations to go overseas and exploit cheaper labor. The other thing, washing machines. How many washing machines, washers and dryers are made in the U.S.? There's a handful left, and you pay for them. When we bought our brand-new washer and dryer, it was like $2,200. If I would have bought the cheaper, you know, foreign-made ones, it would have been less, but then I couldn't look myself in the eye. How many televisions? And I think the television was invented right here in the U.S. Yeah, how many TVs are left made here? Maybe a handful? Maybe? And you stop and you think, all of this stuff that we gave away. Think about the microwave. I don't know that there's a microwave left made in this country. You know, everyone that I've seen made overseas. And that's the kind of stuff that's scary. That we're not making the things that we invented. That we're saying, yeah, let them do it. You know, the iPod thingy that they created, made overseas. The iPhone thingy that they came up with, made overseas. All of these things that we, as Americans, created, we don't produce. So we're not producing what is the wealth. You know, I just got an iPhone. And I like it. I like the iPhone. They told me the iPhone that I got is like $600. Probably cost them $10 to make this. Probably $10. But it's going to cost me, if I ever want to replace it, it's going to cost $600. Who benefits from that? Who benefits from the manufacturing of that? Cost $10 to manufacture. They sell it for $600. It's not made here. Who benefits? The manufacturer. So when you take something and you add value to it, that's how you grow as an economy. That's how you grow as a nation. That's where your wealth and your prosperity come from. Not from shuffling papers, not from some Wall Street scheme, not from derivatives or some high fancyfalutin financial product. No, from creating things. Taking a bunch of plastic and glass and wires and making something of value. That is how you create wealth. Not through some shell game, not through three-card Monty, but by actually building things. And that's where this president had better get off his behind and start talking about jobs, start talking about how to get people trained, because we are going through right now, we are going through a brain drain. The people who had skills have been sitting idle for too long. We need to get people back to work. We need a new jobs bill. We need people with jobs, with paychecks. You know, we can talk about unemployment all day long. We need to get people back to work. That simple. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're not going to believe this student loan story. We're right back after this.
Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The June 19th GE contract expiration for some 15,000 union workers is fast approaching as GE continues to push for what the unions say are massive rollbacks in health care, pensions, wages, and other things. Thousands of GE workers, represented by GE Workers United, rallied June 4th in Lynn, Massachusetts, to make it clear they're united against these massive concessions. Jeff Crosby, president of IUECWA Local 201, says GE's CEO serves as President Obama's jobs czar while his company pursues anti-worker tactics.
They've actually eliminated 22,000 jobs in the United States since the last contract. And in addition, because they helped write the tax code, they paid no federal income taxes last year. And in addition, they've got a $3.2 billion tax credit for next year. So there's no financial logic to this.
On Monday and Tuesday, hundreds of registered nurses from 31 states, joined by labor and community allies, gathered outside the White House and picketed the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They rallied near Congress on Tuesday, calling for a new Main Street contract for the American people. National Nurses United says that nurses want living wage jobs for all, equal access to quality public education, guaranteed health care with a single standard of care, a secure retirement with dignity for all, good housing and protection from hunger, the right to organize unions and collectively bargain, and just taxation systems where corporations and the rich pay their fair share. California's domestic workers' rights bill is headed for the state Senate after approval in the House. It would make California the second state to pass a domestic workers' rights bill.
Caring for elderly patients is hard work. Just ask Bustos Chavez. The former live-in caregiver had to bathe, feed, and tend to her clients' every need. That sometimes meant staying up all night with sick patients, as well as bedridden patients, who have to be turned over every 2 hours to prevent bed sores.
Which means to say that you are always awake. It means to say you are deprived from having a good rest.
She says that the lack of sleep poses health risks for both clients and workers.
Taking care of these patients and at the same time you don't feel good, it lessens the performance that you are giving to your client.
The Chavez is among the hundreds of workers throughout California that are demanding legislators pass a domestic workers bill of rights. The measure would provide overtime pay, uninterrupted sleeping periods, paid sick leave, and workers' compensation. No one knows for sure how many domestic workers live in California, but organizers estimate there are at least 200,000 throughout the nation. The bill was approved in the state assembly last week and is now headed to the Senate. For Workers Independent News, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Organizing America, 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
That's the hope. That is the hope. Hope you don't get fooled by the people you back. And I'm looking at the numbers. Another poll out. Quinnipiac has come out with a poll about Mitt Romney saying, you know, voters not all that comfortable with the fact that he's a Mormon. You know, even as he has come out in the front of the Republican pack. Poll not so sure. The showed that Romney would lose 41-47 in a head-to-head with President Obama, contrary to the results of the Washington Post ABC poll yesterday. And that's what I love about these polls. It's just a matter of the several hundred people you talk to, where their thoughts are. They just take a small sample and they extrapolate what this means on a larger scale. I do buy the fact that the majority of people think Sarah Palin is unelectable and nobody wants her. I do buy that. And I do buy the fact that people in Georgia think that Herman Cain is a great guy because he's from Georgia. His whole pizza empire began there. He's been an Atlanta-based talk show host for some time. So, of course, people in Georgia are going, let's have our hometown guy. Unlike Bachman and Pawlenty, who most people don't believe either one could carry Minnesota, which to me is remarkable. It's kind of like you can't carry your own home when Al Gore didn't carry Tennessee. One of those things just kind of makes you go, wow, there's something wrong there. But Cain came out ahead of Bachman and fellow Georgian, the Newtster, Newt Gingrich, who was third. Palin, a distant fourth. Romney was fifth in Georgia. Not so good. Not so good for Mitzi in the South. But again, he's from Massachusetts. Can't have one of them there fancy pants liberals running around in the Whitey House. So Herman Cain is the guy. And Herman was on Wolf Blitzer. And Blitzer asked him about gun control. And Cain came out and said, I support the Second Amendment. And he said, so what's your answer on gun control? Blitzer said, what's your answer on gun control? And Cain said something that's kind of interesting. He said, the answer is I strongly support the Second Amendment. I don't support onerous legislation that's going to restrict people's rights in order to be able to protect themselves as guaranteed by the Second Amendment. So Blitzer says, so should states or local governments be allowed to control guns, gun situations, or should, Cain pops in, yes. So Blitzer goes, yes, really? Really? You're gonna say? And the answer is yes. So Blitzer goes, so the answer is yes. And Cain says, the answer is yes, that should be a state's decision. And I look at this guy, and maybe this is where Cain is going to lose this whole thing now. Because this is a crossroads of ideology. Which of the amendments is sacrosanct? Which do you go with, the second or the tenth? Is the Second Amendment sacrosanct? Should the states have no say? Or is it the tenth? Is it states' rights? So it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. This from the guy who says he won't sign any bill longer than three pages. Maybe he has short attention span problems. I don't know. But the thing is which of these two? I mean, because after all, he is a constitutional scholar, and he'll tell you, you need to reread. Well, here, listen to him. You can hear it for yourself.
We don't need to rewrite the Constitution of the United States, rewrite it. We need to reread the Constitution and enforce the Constitution. And I know that there are some people that are not going to do that. So for the benefit of those that are not going to read it because they don't want us to go by the Constitution, there's a little section in there that talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, right there in the Constitution. He goes on again to say,
when you get to the part about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, don't stop right there.
Keep reading.
Because that's when it says, when any form of government becomes destructive of those ideals, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. We've got some altering and some abolishing to do.
So looking at Blitzer's question, which does he abolish? The states' rights, to be able to restrict guns, or the Second Amendment, which says, as the right wants to contend, that there should never be any infringements. Interesting thing. And speaking of the Constitution, Cain had a kind of a weird moment. If you remember back in March, when he came onto the scene, he said that under no circumstances would he ever appoint a Muslim to his administration. No Muslims. So a bunch of people got, you know, up in arms, and he said, well, he'll take a little walk back from that. I didn't mean that. He said, I had to appoint any person based on merit, of course. Of course. Now what he's saying, he was on old GB show, and now what he's saying is, you know, not so thrilled about, you know, these Muslims, but if they can prove to me, he said, that they're putting the Constitution of the United States first, I'd appoint them. So Beck says, some kind of loyalty proof. Is that what you mean, Herman? Some kind of loyalty proof for Muslims? And Kane said, yes, loyalty to the Constitution of the United States of America. So Beck asked him, would you do that to a Catholic or would you do that to a Mormon? And Kane said, no, I wouldn't. Now this from our constitutional scholar. Understand that the Constitution that evidently he has not read, and maybe had he read the Constitution, he would have seen that there shall be no religious test. It's right there in the text. Pretty simple. But again, you know, it comes back down to maybe he just read the wrong document. I don't know. Maybe he read the wrong document, Jake. It's that simple.
That is possible.
Or maybe his book on tape skipped that chapter. I don't know. Maybe the notes that he gets from the Heritage Foundation had a typo. I don't know. I don't. So here's where the cat fighting begins. Sarah Palin's people have fired back at Michelle Bachmann's people because, as you remember, Ed Rollins, the veteran GOP strategist, during a radio interview said that Sarah Palin has not been serious over the last couple of years and that she didn't go do the work in the sense of trying to gain more substance. And it's an accurate, really a very accurate assessment of Palin. She did nothing to improve her grasp of policy, of governance. She did none of that. What she did, she quit as a governor. She gave that up. You know, and I don't blame her, man. If I saw hundreds of millions of dollars out there and I got a job that's paying maybe $150,000 a year and I see hundreds of millions, I can't say that I wouldn't be lured away. I can't. So I don't blame her for that, but I do blame her for the rhetoric, the bizarre, I'm quitting for the good of the state. I did it for you people. I abandoned you for you because I care that much. So anyway, Palin's chief of staff, which I'm going, really? She had chief of staff? Michael Glasner is his name. He came out and said, well, Beltway political strategist Ed Rollins has a long, long track record of taking high-profile jobs and promptly sticking his foot in his mouth. I don't think he stuck his foot in his mouth. I think he's spot on right. I think Palin is a kook. But here's the other part of this. I think Michelle Bachmann is just as bad. I think Bachmann is a horrible candidate. And I think Rollins has got his hands full if he's going to deal with that train wreck. Don't you think?
Well, as far as her grasp of the issues, but in some ways, she is a much better candidate than our ex-governor from Alaska. She's a good fundraiser. I think she's got a real shot in Iowa, Rick, believe it or not.
Yeah.
For several reasons. No, I do. I did. That's just the opening salvo. I understand that. Do I think she's going to win the nomination? No. But don't underestimate her.
The woman who said carbon dioxide is portrayed as harmful, but there hasn't even been one study that can be produced that shows that carbon dioxide is a harmful gas.
Rick, you and I both know that there's a part of the right wing in the Republican Party that's anti-intellectual.
Let me hook up my hose to the exhaust of my car, Michelle. Suck on this for a while and tell me how wonderful it is and how it's not harmful.
I understand all that. I understand all that. But
here's another good one.
A lot of our base don't care.
Here's another good one. If we took away the minimum wage, if conceivably it were gone, we could potentially virtually wipe out unemployment completely because we would be able to offer jobs at whatever level. so we can all work for a penny an hour. In Michelle world, that's a great thing. Full employment through poverty.
I'd like to know where she got that study.
I love Michelle Bachmann. I love crazy. The other one, you want to talk about more stuff? There are hundreds and hundreds of scientists, she says, many of them holding Nobel Prizes, who believe in intelligent design. Name one.
Mm-mm.
Name one. She also went on to say, I just take the Bible for what it is, I guess, and I recognize that I'm not a scientist, not trained to be a scientist. I'm not a deep thinker on all of this. I wish I was. I wish I was more knowledgeable. But I'm not a scientist. This is the woman who's saying that, again, that carbon dioxide's not harmful. Keep this woman away from the children. Save the children. Save them. She cannot lead the country. She also said, remember the Terry Schiavo thing? She said Schiavo was healthy. Yeah, there was some brain damage. There was no question. There was some brain damage. But from a health point of view, she was not terminally ill. She was brain dead. Just like you. Maybe, hold on. I guess, you know, looking in the mirror, maybe she... No, I just can't. I can't go there. I just can't. The other one I love, and again, it's, you can't make this stuff up. You just can't make it up. Not all cultures are equal. Really, Michelle, wow. That's just pure brilliance. And I love you. I love you. I'm infatuated. But then again, I've always been attracted to crazy. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Sometimes political karma can be so right, even when it applies to something so wrong. Thus it was that Barack Obama became the first U.S. president in history to sign legislation into law without actually signing it. While he was traveling in Europe, Congress passed a bill extending the infamous Patriot Act for another 4 years of secret autocratic invasions of our privacy. The extension passed 15 minutes before midnight on the day the law was to expire. No time to fly it to Obama for his required signature. So, he ordered that his name be affixed by AutoPen. How appropriate that this liberty-busting act be signed into law by a soulless machine rather than, as required by the Constitution, by the actual president. Article 1, Section 7 says that for a president to approve a congressional bill, quote, he shall sign it. As you might expect, this mechanical usurpation of the human hand has driven the cult of Obama delegitimizers nuts. A pretty short ride for them. And some are railing against the high crime of this non-signature. But the real crime is not in how the bill was signed, but that a Democrat in the White House would sign it at all. The Patriot Act is an atrocious, fundamentally un-American little house of horrors concocted by John Ashcroft and Dick Cheney. For Obama to put his name to it legitimizes the national surveillance state as a new bipartisan authoritarian normal over America. This is Jim Hightower saying, Obama's team asserts that this mechanical signing is authorized by a 2005 Justice Department memo that, abracadabra, autocratically declares it okay. Great. An act of raw authoritarianism, hung around America's neck by the authoritarian Bush regime, is now extended on the basis of an authoritarian executive decree by that same regime. Obama has twisted himself into a karmatic pretzel.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty when we look into the eyes of our kids. Toss brothers, it's a fact.
If we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground.
That'd be a nice thing to do. You know, it'd be nice to pass on, you know, a clean environment, clean water, clean air. It'd be a nice thing to do, don't you think? Our kids might appreciate it. They might appreciate it. They might even thank us for it. You know, kids can be, you know, thankless every once in a while. But, you know, if you left them an environment that was clean, you know, with some water and some air so that they could live and not have to, you know, wheeze all the time or boil their water, then they might appreciate it. Might be a good thing. Which is why I find what the folks in West Virginia are doing just remarkable. They're marching the old way before the Blair Mountain. Basically a war is what happened, the Battle of Blair Mountain, where, the coal barons had their army, and the workers were demanding better wages, hours, and conditions, and it was a war. And the folks are marching right now. In West Virginia until the 11th. They started on the 5th, marching till the 11th, to save Blair Mountain, from this mountaintop removal. And it's where they go in and they just blow it up. Just chop right off the top of the mountain. Scoop the coal out, put that waste that used to be a mountain into the rivers and into the storage pits. Destroying the environment. And one of the guys, his name is Chuck Keeney. He's a PhD. He's a descendant of the famed UMWA organizer Frank Keeney. He wrote this great piece, and I wanted to read some of it because I think it's really well written and it's spot on. He said, "Nothing like this has ever happened to me before. Walking the road to Blair Mountain," he said, "we passed an elementary school. Several teachers took their kids out of class. The children and the teachers cheered as they walked by. Minutes later, a man slows, gives the people the middle finger, yells, 'Get a job, tree huggers.' A few more paces, they see an elderly couple sitting on the front porch who are clapping and nodding. The old woman's crying and telling them, 'Keep going, keep the fight.' You know, other drivers go by and they hurl obscenities. Other people are yelling, 'Thank you.' Other people are saying, you know, 'Keep up the fight.' Others are saying, 'Go back where you came from.'" Again, showing the divide. You know, going back to that Gould quote, "I could easily pay half the country to kill the other half." He writes, "Behold the road to Blair Mountain, where another civil war looms in the hills of Appalachia. 90 years before, 10,000 armed coal miners marched to secure a decent living and be treated as human beings. They fought an army paid for by the coal operators at the Battle of Blair Mountain. Miners bled and died to provide a better future for their children and consequently lay the groundwork for the privileges of weekends, 40-hour work weeks, and many other benefits that workers today enjoy. To date, the Battle of Blair Mountain is the largest labor uprising in the history of our country." He goes on to say, "Today there's a second Battle of Blair Mountain. The coal companies want to destroy this historic ground with mountaintop removal." He says, "We're trying to save it. Marchers brave the heat, intimidation of the coal companies, and the ugliness of some who oppose us. When we originally planned the march, we arranged to stay at various parks and campsites along the way. While many of these places initially welcomed us, they all, within the last few days, told us we can no longer stay there. We then found alternative campsites. These places, too, have seen withdrawn of their support. Some of them have refused us because of threats from the coal companies. Others have not given us specific reasons. What we do know is that many of the owners of these campsites were very hospitable at first, but have since said with regret we cannot rest on their property. Therefore, we are forced to shuttle members back and forth in our headquarters each day. Nonetheless," he says, "we march on. We march to preserve our national heritage. We march to stand up for labor rights.
we march to save our water and air from the most destructive form of coal mining ever devised. And, you know, I look at this, and it's these are the people that stand to the forefront. These are the stories that you don't see on the front pages anymore. These are folks who say, you know, look, you can be against mountaintop removal. You can be for it, whatever. But don't destroy this piece of history. It's much like saying that we want to build a casino right dead smack in the middle of Gettysburg. People are opposed to it. And it's our history. I mean, Blair Mountain, again, like this guy pointed out, was the beginning of that revolution of workers saying, we want, we want better wages. We want better hours. We want better conditions. We want better lifestyles. We want to be able to see our kids. We want safety. We want dignity, human rights. That simple.
From what I know of it, many of those had fought in World War I. So they knew what battle was. And unfortunately for the coal companies, they picked the wrong time in history. And it was a brutal, brutal labor dispute. Many people died. And you don't hear, quite frankly, you don't hear that a lot about that, Rick.
You know, we had a guy on the other night, and one of the organizers talking about it. And, you know, I had wondered after talking about it, what kind of resistance, what kind of, and we don't know what's yet to come. This is going to continue for a couple of more days as these folks march on. But, you know, I'm not surprised that, you know, the plans that they had laid are now being destroyed. Threats are now being made probably to the places where they were going to stay. I'm not surprised. Anyway, some other environmental news. Again, you just shake your head and go, here we go. The Chamber of Commerce, the GOP hit squad, their president, Tom Donohue, he sent a letter yesterday to the president demanding that the administration speed up issuing new offshore drilling permits, offer more offshore areas for oil and gas exploration, open new areas for drilling in the western U.S., and approve permits for the Keystone XL pipeline proposed to bring oil from Canada's, the Canadian tar sands, to the U.S. Again, more drill, baby, drill. No talk of how do we get off the juice. No talk of, hey, let's think about some other forms. Just drill, baby, drill. John Boehner, the Democrats called on John Boehner to eliminate billions of oil industry tax cuts. All those breaks that they had given to the oil industry over the last, forever. They want, the 109 House Democrats want him to pull those tax breaks as part of their deficit reduction plan. I don't know how with a straight face Boehner can say, well, you know, we're going to cut programs from seniors, and we're going to cut programs to poor workers and to poor children, but yet we're going to keep these handouts to the oil industry. I'm just not getting it. Not getting it at all. Also, Colorado Senator Mark Udall unveiled a bill today that would require the military to step up efforts to find alternatives to oil with a $3 billion provision to the Senate's military spending plan, encouraging efficiency, biofuels, and alternative energy. And, you know, one of the things that some friends have said is surprising, well, maybe not surprising, that our military uses a whole bunch of oil and at a really high cost. And you think about it, you know, you think about all of the, you know, all of the vehicles, all of the aircraft carriers, all of that stuff that needs fuel, and we use a lot of it. Wouldn't it be nice? Well, I don't know. To do something different. In fact, I had seen a report yesterday talking about some of the military vehicles being actually hybrids. I'm not quite sure I feel all that secure with an electric vehicle out in the sand, but you know, it's something I guess we're talking about.
Well, I mean, if you know anything about hybrids, I wouldn't have a problem with them. I really now, if you're talking about all electric vehicles, then it's something of a different color. You know, you would think with all the, you brought up the cost of fuel, you would think that the Department of Defense would be able to do the huge amount of energy that they use. They would be able to get a good deal from the oil companies.
I guess it's all in delivery.
I guess the oil companies don't differentiate between the government and anyone else.
When you have privatized your supply chain, you pay for delivery. And that's where I understand the main cost is. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said yesterday that he is planning on scaling back New Jersey's goal for renewable energy as he looked for an achievable approach to generating electricity in New Jersey. And again, you know, a very short-sighted, very pro-business, pro-oil, big oil decision. And what would you expect from someone like Christie? And finally, the small island states are at risk from rising seas due to climate change. They hinted on Tuesday at a compromise in order to kickstart the UN talks on reaching a binding deal to curb global warming. Because here's the thing, if you're sitting on an island somewhere and that water keeps rising inch by inch by inch as the glaciers melt, eventually you're standing underwater. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Victoria Jones Talk Radio News Service. We're right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We are AFSCME.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
I guess Wienergate is growing larger?
Yes, it is. We apparently now have an explicit photo that is out, which is really all we needed, or all Anthony Weiner needed, as the New York Times reports that Weiner's wife, Huma Abedin, 35, is pregnant with the couple's first child.
Oh, what good timing.
Great timing, yes. She is, fortunately for her, out of the country. She left today for a trip with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton for North Africa. And I'm sure she's delighted that she's not here.
Yeah, and now we see you got a couple of people, Allison Schwartz down in Philly, throwing her 2 cents in, and Mike Michaud up in Maine throwing his 2 cents in that he should resign. I watched Ed Schultz last night just, you know, beyond himself that, you know, he just won't resign. I don't think he should resign. I don't care.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The Allison Schwartz thing, I think she's got more than 2 cents because she's the head of recruiting at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and that's really a top campaign lieutenant position, and
right.
it's an important position in the Democratic Party, and I think that this is a signal from the Democratic Party to Wiener, go. This isn't like a backbencher.
Right.
This is a sign. This is go.
Well, we'll see what happens. I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yes, me too.
I could care less about the rest of it. I think another one of these really just stupid, distracting pieces of nonsense that we end up having to talk about.
Yeah, it's very odd. The whole thing is just strange, and you know, in many ways, it shouldn't impact. You know, it shouldn't impact anybody. But it's taken off because
we're juvenile, we're sophomoric. This is the kind of stuff that grabs our attention. The fact that the Republicans want to privatize Social Security, that's far down on the. That's not even on the list. What's on the list is headlines. Wienergate.
I could get snarky and say, look at what percentage of talk show hosts are men and what percentage of talk show hosts are women, and who makes the decisions about what should be talked about in the news.
Point taken. I mean, we're talking about it.
We are.
And I hate it.
And then we're moving on.
There you go. Healthcare. The healthcare bill,
yes,
in front of the judge.
Well, as you know, there's 26 states who are suing the government to overthrow the Affordable Care Act.
Pennsylvania is one of them.
Earlier this year, Judge Roger Vinson in Florida found the individual mandate unconstitutional and then said, I'm throwing the whole thing out. So today, in Atlanta, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals had three judges hear the appeal from the government and from the 26 states. And they didn't really tip their hands, but they asked tough questions of both sides, and they were really quite tough on the Obama administration, actually.
Well, as they should be. I mean, you know, this is important stuff. I can see this going one of the two different ways. But if it goes the way of the administration, I can see the right screaming that these are two Clinton appointees and an H.W. Bush appointee who made the decision.
Yes, exactly. Now, Judge Marcus did make a point that she said it's undisputed that the uninsured make more than 20 million visits to emergency rooms each year. Why, if that's true, would that not in every sense it be in every classic sense activity, he asked, which seems to be a reasonable question. But on the other hand, they kept making the point that, look, there's never been a case of the government forcing private individuals to buy private items.
I don't know. Well, I guess when you put it that way, you're right. I keep going back to the Social Security and Medicare and that we do pay into through our taxes. And it is, if you work for something, you got to pay it. That's mandatory. And that's for me, it comes back down to the other part of this is the personal responsibility, which again, I think the Republicans should be in favor of. You take care of yourself, you make sure that you're covered so that I don't have to pay for it. To me, that makes pretty good sense.
Well, this is what's going to be so interesting to see which way they're going to jump.
Yeah.
And, of course, whichever way they jump, everyone's going to jump straight down to Washington, D.C. and go in front of the Supreme Court.
That's where this is going to end up. And personally, I wish they would have just beelined it right there and been done with it.
So yeah, and of course, we can't go that route. Even though they would like to, and Virginia had a good shot. The state of Virginia, not
right.
Virginia the woman, but Virginia had a good shot at trying it, but it didn't work.
Right. Some news on the swipe fee front. A couple of senators tried to delay it a bit, I guess.
Yes. The couple of lead senators, that's John Tester, Democrat from Montana, Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, also bringing up the rear, Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of Wall Street, and they were trying to slow. That was a bit of editorializing.
Yeah, okay.
They were trying to slow down the implementation of the rules, which would cut down the debit fee, the fee that is charged to retailers every time a debit card is swiped, from 44 cents to 12 cents to the banks. It goes straight to the banks.
Right.
And the banks are saying, well, the sky is going to fall, so we're going to have to end all the rewards programs and everything else, and it's all going to fall apart. Now, it was very interesting. They wanted to delay this for basically about a year for study, despite the fact that the Federal Reserve already has seen 11,000 documents studying it. But nevertheless, they thought that they probably had the vote, and there was massive lobbying on this. Also, massive lobbying, incidentally, by the retailers as well. I mean, it's been full employment for K Street lobbyists for the last several months.
Well, this is a very one side's going to win, one side's going to lose. Either it's going to be the big box retailers who are going to make out, or it's going to be the banks. So pick your poison there. And personally, I hate the fact that I'm siding with the banks on this, but I do think if we can make that a little more expensive to use the credit, maybe people go back to cash, and maybe we don't have so many people in debt. Just a thought.
Wow.
I'm all in favor of making it a little more expensive to use credit cards, just for the fact that I think we're, as a society, way too indebted.
Interesting.
But that's my position. Lastly, the White House has agreed to answer some questions on Libya?
Yes. You remember there was a big resolution passed last week. First of all, there was Dennis Kucinich's resolution saying, get out of Libya, and then they sidelined that. But in the end, they allowed a vote. And then Speaker Boehner had a resolution saying it was very naughty to go into Libya, and we want to know why and what it all means. I just sort of paraphrased it. But that was basically what he said. And we want to know within about 14 days. And that was directed to President Obama. Well, Jay Carney, the press secretary, said today that the administration will answer the questions, and they will do it within the time frame that Boehner specifies. But they said answer the questions in the spirit that we have answered questions that members have had in the past and consistent with that approach towards consulting Congress. I don't know what that means exactly, but they do intend to answer the questions. And they do intend to do it within the time frame, which I actually think that part of it is very interesting.
Right. Well, we'll see. I got to be honest. I was against going in there from the beginning. I'm against the whole thing. To me, I think the president, before getting us into these things, should have to go before Congress, because after all, isn't that their responsibility?
Well, after 60 days, it certainly becomes it. Although Jay Carney is maintaining flat out that no, we won't use the word in compliance, but if he were, that's what he would say that the Obama administration is in.
Interesting. Victoria Jones, I appreciate your time. Talk Radio News Service, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All righty, and now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, some interesting legislation coming out of Harrisburg. Some legislation about abortion clinics. We had that horrible situation in Philadelphia, and there's been some efforts to address that issue. Legislation that would overhaul the operating standards for abortion clinics in Pennsylvania cleared a first crucial vote in the Senate on Wednesday after a tense, sometimes angry debate over whether the proposal would improve women's health care or force clinics to close in a backdoor attempt to outlaw abortion. The bill remains in the Senate. It is a response to the now-shuttered abortion clinic in Philadelphia that prosecutors called a house of horrors. Final vote in the bill is expected next week, and Democrats say they are not done proposing amendments to it. The underlying bill was sponsored in the Senate Public Health and Welfare Committee by Chairwoman Pat Vance, a Republican from Cumberland County, and it was designed to strengthen licensing standards and inspection requirements for abortion clinics. However, Senator Bob Mensch, who's a Republican from Montgomery County, proposed an amendment that will require clinics performing abortions on women after 9 weeks of pregnancy to meet the same standards as freestanding outpatient surgery centers. It passed 31-19 after senators voted 29-20 to defeat an attempt by Vance to push back the requirements in Mensch's amendment to 14 weeks instead of 9. Opponents of Mensch's amendment said abortion clinics today are being regularly inspected and have no record of problems imposing the standards of surgery centers, which include rules regulating the size of rooms and entrances. Fire safety equipment and nursing staffing are unnecessary, so expensive that they result in the closing of clinics. We are not using this as a facade to close down these clinics, Van said, contending that the case of Dr. Kermit Gazelle Philadelphia Clinic arose from enforcement failure by the Department of Health, not lax standards. Be interesting to see eventually what comes out of that.
It's a backdoor attempt to limit.
Absolutely is.
And any statement to the contrary is a bold-faced lie. I don't care what anybody says. This is about limiting a woman's rights.
Well, Pat Vance has it right. What happened in Philly was not a result of the standards. It was a result of lack of enforcement. And she's absolutely right. And I'll be honest, Rick, I'm surprised at her stance, but I'm glad to see it.
But you look at, today they pushed through SB3. To limit private corporations and consumers the ability to have those services in health insurance. I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
I know, and there was a big fight about that. And supposedly, when it came out of Washington on abortion, it was supposed to be neutral. But apparently, in some of these states that are controlled by the conservatives, they believe that the law of the land isn't good enough, and they want to tighten as much as they can and limit what is really a legal practice. Pennsylvania Senate approves ban on talking and texting while driving. This is controversial the way it came down. This is a controversial bill. Lawmakers voted 41-8 to approve the proposal by State Senator Robert Tomlinson, who is from Bucks County. The measure now moves to the State House for consideration. Tomlinson's bill would allow drivers to talk on a cell phone while driving only if using a hands-free device, such as a Bluetooth. Using a handheld phone to talk, text, or surf the web would be banned. The bill would also ban cell phone use outright for drivers under 18. Tomlinson's proposal would also limit drivers under 18 to only one teenage passenger in the first 6 months and then allow up to three teenage passengers. Exception are made for family members. And it would make not wearing seatbelts a primary offense for 16 and 17-year-olds and passengers between 8 and 18. I see some problems with this law, Rick. I think they're making exceptions that go too far. As far as banning the use of cell phones, I'm not so sure I understand the difference between Bluetooth and just holding your phone up. I think the problem is not the device. I think it's the fact that your attention is devoted to the call. No, I'm serious. And in fact, it was mentioned by the opponents. I'm not so sure. If you're going to ban it, then ban it, whether you have Bluetooth or not. Because the truth is, the real safety. You disagree with that? Right? You're laughing, but you disagree with it.
Do you know what the Bluetooth is?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
It's a device that you can use in your car. Where you can talk into, well, some of them are hooked up to the radio, some of them have earphones on their own, and you don't have to hold the phone up to your ear. I understand that. But again, that's not the problem. The problem is that when you're talking on the phone, whether it's Bluetooth or not, your attention is riveted towards the telephone call and not paying attention to the road. And I understand that, but I think
I'm in favor of the next bill that's got to come down then. And I'm hoping the next one comes. Banning children from the car, banning radios. In fact, I think the driver should be in a compartment off all by itself with no distract, with nothing in that, just the steering wheel, and no noise, because we can't do anything and drive. And especially take those kids out, because the kids are the biggest distraction of all. So we partition that off in little glass section.
Well, if you noticed, and I am serious about this, texting should definitely be outlawed. To me, that's dangerous. I mean, obviously, your attention has to be on, the texting rather than driving. I find that to be dangerous. Can we agree on that?
It comes down to the individual. I'm not a big fan of government telling me what to do.
So you're basically saying this whole bill is probably not a good idea.
Well, what it is it's more ammunition for the extreme right, and again, it's pushed by the right to limit what people do, and it's one of those things that people complain about. It's like the seatbelt. Everybody loves to complain about the seatbelt.
But the irony is, the right always complains about too much government,
and that's what I'm saying.
Gee, the right wing being
it is
being,
what it is.
Being a bunch of hypocrites.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're right back to wrap things up.
You could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the Anti-Immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strike breakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours and a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day, and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in labor's forgotten massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.ricksmithshow.com.
You helped to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm talking about not much love to go around, taking a page out of the Paul LePage book, the governor of Maine, Republican governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker. He took the painting down of, the children, the poor children. It was a painting entitled Wishes in the Wind, which depicts three children, an African-American girl who has been homeless, a Hispanic girl that came from a low-income family, and a boy who had lost his brother and father to a drunk driving accident. They took the painting down. Don't want to see those poor people. And again, part of me thinks this is because maybe deep down, like the Grinch, Scott Walker has, something of a conscience. Doesn't want to see the poverty, doesn't want to see the strife, the grief that his policies are surely causing. So maybe. But I wonder what it is, with these people trying to sterilize their view. You got LePage up there in Maine taking down the the portrait or the big display of the workers' memorial there in Wisconsin, taking away the poor people. We don't want to see those rabble. Amazing stuff. A story out of Sweden caught my attention, which again I think is kind of funny. Earlier in the month, a drunken sailor went out on his boat and in a panic he called the authorities, said, "Oh my gosh, my wife, she fell overboard. She's drowned." So they called out all the, you know, the special people, and you know, they did all the, you know, the rescue and search and rescue stuff. And turns out his wife was at home. He was so drunk that he had forgotten that he left her at home. So there you go.
They probably slapped him with a nasty fine.
I don't know. Also, another good drunk story, and you got to love drunk stories because I know I do. UPI had a beautiful one. Police in Florida said a bare-breasted drunken driver crossed the double yellow line and tried to evade police while traveling under 20 miles an hour. The Martin County Sheriff's Office said a deputy caught up with the Nissan back on May 30th and believed that might have been involved in a fight at one of the area watering holes. Saw her cross the double yellow line, and there she was, driving topless. And, you know, I can remember, you know, when I, years and years ago, I had friends who were policemen, and I would tend to think, you know, and this was, you know, back at another date, that she probably would have gotten off years ago, you know, just because of the, you know, the funny things. I mean, I once got out of a red light ticket by saying, "Come on, it was almost yellow." I don't know, I think that would work today. Also in Texas, Grapevine, Texas, a 66-year-old man, he attempted to rescue his Yorkshire Terrier from a storm drain. He ended up getting himself caught. He jumps down into the storm drain, hands out little yippy-yappy, and realizes he can't pull himself out of the manhole. And I go, you know, really? You're gonna go down in the manhole and not have a way out? That's one of those situations where you go, sorry, you're gonna have to stay there a while. Find your own way out. Interesting, a small Mennonite college in Indiana, they have stopped playing the Star Spangled Banner at their athletic games, saying that it violates their pacifist beliefs. I'm going to be interested to see where this goes. They announced on Monday that no longer would they be doing it. They said, "With courage, grace, and hope, Goshen College," which I have actually heard of, "will have a long and bright future of furthering God's kingdom." The board asked President Jim Brenneman to find an alternative song, something a little less warlike, like "America the Beautiful" has been suggested. The Goshen News reported the board voiced its vision for Goshen College to be an influential leader in liberal arts education with a growing capacity to serve a theologically, politically, racially, and ethnically diverse constituency, both within and beyond the Mennonite community, and concluded that continuing to play the national anthem comprised the ability of college constituents to advance their vision together. Interesting, interesting stuff. And finally, one last good thing. An Ohio judge has recommended that people visiting the Franklin County Common Pleas Courthouse, this is a courthouse, that down there in Cincinnati, or actually in Columbus, saying that, telling women, if you're going to wear a skirt to our courthouse, take the elevator, because the stairs are glass. Again, who would do this other than a man, make glass stairs? And I'm sure they did that on purpose. But Judge Julie Lynch said those wearing skirts, dresses, and kilts to the Columbus courthouse, which officially opened on Monday, should avoid the glass stairs due to the busy walkway located directly underneath. So, you know, if you're doing that, or, you know, maybe you want to have a good show.
Well, maybe you're looking for an audition, you know, looking for a shot in a movie or something. You know, you never know.
A shot in the movie. Yeah, I'm sure there are movie producers.
If it's a woman with good-looking legs and they want somebody to notice them, they go up the stairs. No. You're smiling about that. There have been movie stars that, by the way, have been discovered just like me, by the way.
Name one. Hold that thought.
Betty Grable. Betty Grable.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure.
Anyway, I want to thank all of our guests. Thank you for being here. Tomorrow we're going to be at the UN bringing you some content from there. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's color like the tide flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain. Democracy is coming to the
that the Republican Party, Juanita, does not outright despise.
Yeah, but they don't mind using them.
No, it's there for them. They're special people.
It's
they're God's.
It's
no,
for,
they're
for them to look at.